Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
My stuff.
What's up, everybody? This is Carrick with ACG, and I'm here with Abzi and Johnny, Gene Park, and Mike Williams. And we are doing the Best Gaming Podcast live. Thanks to these guys for showing up. You guys will see Silver and Reg next week, for sure. We haven't banned them from the channel. I've just been adding a person each time because I wasn't really aware of how last podcast was going to go. It went great, by the way. Number one, and it wasn't because these guys were gone, I want to say. But it's one of our highest rated podcasts.
It's because Canada had no internet.
It's because Canada had no internet. Yeah, the Canadians would have voted it down, damn it.
Oh, yeah.
But no, we had a spectacular podcast with Brian Edward Hill. So if you guys haven't got a chance to check that one out, you know, we're on Spotify, we're on iTunes, but I love having these two on, and we decided let's get together and talk about some good stuff. Let's discuss games, and because this week isn't filled with game news, we're going to also talk about other stuff as well. Maybe some pizza talk, just because I'm really hungry already. Let's start with these guys to see what they've been playing, though, first. Mike, what have you been playing?
Right now, I'm playing Urbex City Builder. Which is a little indie game, you know, SimCity-ish, voxels. It's not like, don't go into it expecting like another City Skylines SimCity. It's a little bit more of like a puzzle game almost when you finally get into it. And but it's a nice, chill city building experience in the same way another recent indie, Terra Nil, is, which is just like, I just need to vibe just a little bit, just sometimes.
Relaxation game?
That and Fire Emblem Three Hopes.
That's the DLC for Fire Emblem, right?
It's the Warriors game. Sorry, it's Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes.
Okay, gotcha. What do you think of that? Can you talk about it? Is it under... It's out, right?
No, it's out. It's been out.
So what did you think of that one?
I love it. I'm a Musou fan. So once you get in, it's like gardening to me. Like, you just get into that little range, and again, you're just vibing, just hitting people, like beating the shit out of giant armies of folks with hot anime people. It's
hell yeah.
Fun.
Mike, which house did you go with?
Oh, huh?
Which house did you go with?
I mean. Claude and Edelgard are scrubs.
Edelgard.
No, they're scrubs. Forget them. Claude is a cop. Edelgard is, you know, she's royalty. You gotta, you can't.
I like the dark mage guy with her, though. I like him.
Okay. All. Yeah, that is true. But not gold lions, or whatever they're called.
I was going to ask.
Golden deer.
It feels to me like whenever a big IP goes to the Dynasty Warriors, it's like their B-movie version of whatever, or the sequel that isn't got the main actor. It's always that side thing. You know how you get a sequel, like, you know, you get a new Mummy movie and they replaced Rachel Weisz or whatever her name is with another lady, and you're like, you know, we sort of get it. That's what all those Dynasty Warrior games are. I did the Dragon Force ones. Oh, Dragon Quest. Dude, I like that 10 times better than any of the other ones because it was... There's something about it where you're just like, okay, let's inject this other, you know, this other IP into it and go for it. And
yeah, I've actually found that fun. Three Hopes takes some of that idea and it's like, okay, let's play with that. In that the story is, what if a thing that happened early on in Three Houses happened differently, and then the plot just goes from there.
Very sick.
It's familiar.
I enjoyed the Zelda one. I played the
Age of Calamity or the first one.
The first one.
Is that Hyrule Warrior or something Warriors?
Hyrule Warriors. Hyrule Warriors. The definitive edition on the Switch.
It has a lot of content there too, like a lot of different game modes and
it is a ridiculous amount of content. Like you can just never finish that game.
Yep, pretty much.
It's one of those games that we were talking about return on investment prior to the podcast going live. That's a game where if you bought it, you're like, dude, you don't really need to do anything for the next, you know, 4 weeks of your life. You could just play this constantly. Speaking of that, Gene, what are you playing?
As you can see, I have I'm probably the only person in 2022 who bought the Cyberpunk Secret Lab chair.
Oh, it's got one sale. It's one sale this year.
It's got one sale. You know, I looked up on YouTube for reviews of it, and it's like everyone just reviewed it when it came out, and they're like, "Oh, I can't wait for Cyberpunk. It's gonna be the greatest game of all time." And then you know, like it's just like crickets afterwards. Like nobody's talking about the chair, but I got the chair because I've been playing Cyberpunk. And this is actually would be my fifth run of Cyberpunk. And I'm really enjoying it now more than ever. Number one, the 1.5 update is really nice. You know, I'm playing on Xbox, so I have no frills, you know, shadow ray tracing, which is fine. I do miss the reflections on PC. But everything feels good. And you know, if you guys don't know, if your listeners don't know, I was recently diagnosed with colon cancer. So, you know, I'm happy to talk about it too, but that recent diagnosis has kind of given me like a new weird perspective on the story of V and him like facing down his mortality. And before I thought that it was really weird that this juxtaposition of this, his time is ticking down, right? And then like the game is telling you, go see Takamura in the diner. You got to go see him, and you got to find the other one to find the cure to get Keanu Reeves out of your head. And then like you're like, oh, okay, I got to do this. I got to like do the adventure, right? And then like now as I'm playing Cyberpunk, like one, I already know what the story is, so I don't feel any pressure to do any of that crap. And then two, there's something empowering about just completely ignoring what's killing you and then going around and just doing stuff around the city. So like for me, like I can't like personally like always ignore the reality of the cancer. Like I have like doctor's appointments that I need to go to. I was at one last night. I had surgery last night, and I had another appointment this morning. So I can't really ignore any of that. So to be able to play a game where a character is dying and is able and you could just ignore it for forever.
Then I will ignore it.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun, and I'm just taking in Night City as like what the game, what everyone kind of imagined the game would be. Mm-hmm. We're just kind of driving around and like just doing bounties. They really changed up the bounty system to make it more rewarding, to make it feel like it's like an actual part of a system as opposed to just random cell phone calls and texts that you're getting. You know, the cop missions feel a little bit more integrated. The driving actually feels weighty. The NPCs actually react to what you're doing. The cars actually react to what you're doing, and they actually feel like actual people driving in the cars as opposed to like things like laying on a track. So there's a lot of little things that they updated with 1.5 that makes the game feel like a normal open world game.
Most importantly, they added a walk button on PC. So
yes, they added the walk button on PC so you can immerse yourself a little bit better. That was never a problem on console, thank goodness. But yeah, that was definitely a problem on PC. I played it with controller on PC anyway, so that actually wasn't a problem for me either. But yeah, there's a lot more immersion, you know. So yeah, I just got the Akira bike again, so that's a lot of fun, and just been grinding money. So yeah, for some reason I love Cyberpunk 2077 and 2022.
Gaston, $2 super chat says, "Sup Gene, hope you one shot cancer or headshot cancer."
Hell yeah.
either one he will.
Hell yeah.
Sony tweeted about Bungie coming out this morning. $2 super chat from Atomic Bomb Kid or Adam Bomb Kid. Yeah, I did see that. That Bungie basically said the full purchase is done, so we can now, or Sony said the full purchase is done, so now we can officially welcome them. I'm sort of getting tired. It's like every 2 weeks you wake up and they're like, we want to officially. It's like I see it and I'm all, oh God, somebody else got bought. We want to officially. You just see them pop up, and especially Sony here lately. They've been quite a number of sort of purchases that have surprised me. Speaking of surprise, Johnny, do you have a surprise, or are you playing the same game as always?
Well, I actually got surprised because Mike talked about Musou games, and I've been watching this week a friend play Orochi 3, which is a game that came out on Steam this week, and it's actually a port of Orochi 2, Japanese naming, right?
Yeah.
So it came out
like
under
Lucky Honorable Horseshoe number 4, and you're like,
yeah, and so it was called number 2 Kingdom but because Hearts. It didn't come out here or whatever, it is now it's 3, but it's the same game just ported to. Anyway, it was a lot of fun to just watch my friend play that, because you know, she knows all the ins and outs. She played it way back in the day. And once you start getting the really powerful weapons and stuff, it gets really satisfying to watch. So that's been fun. I've been also playing Bioshock Infinite for the first time. I'm close to finishing
that.
Oh,
damn.
Yeah, it's... I'm so glad I decided to play it, because even though the gameplay in one didn't click fully with me, this one has so many little additions, like the grappling, you know, like just so many things that make it more fun for me. And it's just smoother, right? It has like progressed. It has evolved with the years. So great, great game. Great setting with the flying cities. I found that really inspired of a choice for a setting. And that's about it. I've been playing a bit of Mass Effect 1 Legendary Edition as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
One of the best games ever. What about you, Abzi?
Oh, yeah. By the way, Johnny, you have to play the DLC for Bioshock Infinite. Just putting it out there.
Okay, noted.
It's the best in the world.
You got it.
Yeah. I picked up GTA 4 from on Steam. It was on sale for like $6.
Awesome.
Came with the DLC, and I've never played it before, like properly. Wow. When I was a kid, you know, all I cared about was just playing it with cheat codes and, you know, killing a lot of people. But I've been playing that, and it's pretty crazy. I did have to do a lot of modding or a lot of setup on PC to have it run at a frame rate higher than 30. And also, it doesn't have a shader cache. So every single time you're in the loading screen, it loads all the shaders. It takes forever, even if you have it on NVMe. So I had to actually install a shader cache. But the game is great. I can't believe it came out in 2008. There's a lot of attention to detail there that was pretty cool. You know, where you shoot people and your passengers reacting to the music you put on. Like, you know, the little Jacob. He's like my favorite character in the game. He's Jamaican. So I play Rasta music in the car, and he comments. He's like, "Oh shit, that's some good music." Mm-hmm. Other than that, I've been reading Berserk, and I'm on the third deluxe book. I love that franchise.
Yeah, and, that's the good shit.
It's so good. It's so good. And that's pretty much about it.
Gaz, $5 super chat. I'm pregnant with your child, ACG. That's Gaz from Colton's podcast. What's up, man? We're going to have them on probably next week. Brett Moore, $2 super chat. Three words: Power Wash Simulator. Yeah. Yeah, the simulator games are huge, man. It's so funny because if you go and look at the simulator games, Power Wash, obviously Thief, the driving games, everything. Especially when you look at Playway as a publisher, they have to be the most prolific publisher in video games. No one ever talks about them, but the number of amazing games that they have that are rated very positive is mind blowing. If you go to Steam and you start looking at how good some of these simulator games are. So I get you there. Three words: Power Wash Simulator. I would say, I'm not going to count how many words, but you should do motorbike repair mechanic. And I think I have 21 last year's. It's very good if you haven't tried it. Me, I have been playing
Valhalla.
Yeah, Valhalla, I guess. So I'm doing a walk in the walk. It was 9 hours long. And I thought, that's a pretty long video. So I'm going to cut it to 2 4.5 hour. Long, I don't even know. I might even cut it more than that. There's a lot that they did. And this is something that I adore about Ubisoft. They, regardless if you like their games, and I would argue that the Assassin's Creed series probably doesn't have a bad game, as in bad, bad. Even Liberation, who I know a lot of people maybe weren't a big fan of, I really enjoyed a lot of the stuff that happened in Liberation. I think overall, they just have a good series of games. Far Cry, somewhat. They've had one or two that I don't think were amazing, but it's the amount of time they spend making a world that blows me away. And in fact, the reason why we're able to play Discovery Tours is because they did Discovery Tours for their game. They paid people to go to Chicago for Watch Dogs. They paid people to go to the Middle East, look at Egypt, Iran, Iraq, all those places for when they were doing Origins, and then Odyssey as well. And they would ship them over there. They would take thousands of pictures and all this stuff. And that actually is what turned into the Discovery Tours you're able to play now. And Valhalla is no exception. And so this playing it and looking at it from that standpoint is pretty awesome, man. And we're going to talk a little bit about reviewing versus like doing a video like that. And what you get out of the game.
It's crazy for Valhalla. When I launched it and just kind of walked around, because I never, you know, when you play Assassin's Creed games, you're just running everywhere, you're platforming, you're doing all these things. When I was walking around, you notice very a lot of detail into these worlds, where I'd see some dude plucking chicken and some other dude kind of like washing some meat or whatever. And there's a lot of like things that people are doing that you wouldn't really notice if you're just playing the game normally.
Yeah, and I mean, I look at those for reviews because that's what I'm always like attracted to, is that kind of stuff. And looked into their meta AI. I've watched, man, I have like 40 hours of time allotted just for GDC videos from Assassin's Creed alone. It's pretty amazing that they do that. Same thing happened with Witcher 3. So that's pretty much what I'm playing. I'm trying to think if there's, no, that's it. That's all I've been doing. There's a couple reviews coming up and a couple previews that I can't talk about, but those are coming at some point. And then somebody said, AC games are forgettable games, and that's worse than a bad game. And I can tell you honestly, I don't think I've forgotten any Assassin's Creed game.
No, I'd probably say the worst is maybe Revelations.
Unity, because of the tech issues. Even though I think Unity is awesome, it also is terrible because of the tech issues. That's one thing I had.
There's also Assassin's Creed Rogue. That one was forgettable. I think the only one.
It's my favorite one. Let's talk.
Okay. I liked it. I liked it a lot, but I forgot everything that's happened. And I only played it once, and I just like didn't like do a complete run through of it. So
Rogue and Unity have the opposite problem, in that Unity is a pretty good game with an utterly forgettable protagonist.
Best like, game with an utterly forgettable protagonist.
Whereas Rogue is an okay game, but Shay and his story is great.
Okay, thank you.
Shay is great.
That's where I was going to go, that to me is like one of the better stories. And because it wasn't released in the same way, remember, it was overlapping. So they only did a 360 version. And I reviewed it, one of my favorite reviews of all time, because nobody wanted to review it. They're already on the new systems, they're on the new hotness.
They should keep doing that. Like, Ubisoft, Sophia, and some of the smaller studios, they should let them continue. Because I honestly thought when Valhalla came out, I was like, you got space to do like a take the world, reuse it again, you know, like Far Cry does with the next year.
Right.
And, you know, like, I don't know, AC Robin Hood or something like that, like a linear game that's a little bit shorter with the same world.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Like they could just
Robin Hood. Oh, come on. That's crazy. Well,
you know what's funny, though? Remember awesome. How much trouble they got in? They only used the height map from Far Cry 3 to make Primal. And, you know, the nerds were out there going like, oh, that means they did no work whatsoever. There's absolutely nothing brand new. You're just like, wow, you have no clue how reuse is actually done. Like reuse is done many times. And that kind of thing, that has no real justification to bitch about. But yeah they did bitch about it. Gene muted himself. He'll be back. Let's see. Reading some of this stuff. I missed AC Syndicate. Brett, you got to play it, dude. AC Syndicate, you have two protagonists, people beating the shit out of each other with canes. It can't be more enjoyable than that. You got to try
that one.
And
too,
Jack the Ripper DLC is probably the best DLC ever. No, Atlantis. Atlantis might be the best DLC I've played for the AC games. But Syndicate's awesome, dude, so make sure you play that. Don't come back to the podcast until you played it. I'm going to make you do a book report. So let's jump in. Let's get some of this news out of the way so we can talk about fun shit. Not that news isn't fun. I didn't want to say that. What do we got, Johnny? What's some news bits that we have? What's the big one?
Let me check.
We've got like God of War went up for sale in, what was that, 5 minutes? They sold every single one of the collector editions.
There's also Sony adding the new point reward system.
Oh, the loyalty system?
Yep. Oh, with also
PlayStation Stars.
PlayStation Stars.
And I think that's a good thing. There's also the collectible stuff they're adding, which people thought it was NFTs, but they're actually not.
That's the only thing I took out of this that I liked was the collectible thing, because I knew it wasn't NFTs. When you read it, you can tell that's not
it's
what it
like
is.
Steam
I actually
collectibles,
was like,
you know?
That could be sort of cool. You know, Sony's tried to be injecting home into everything. They've wanted to inject home into shit since the day they first showed it on the PS3. It's like they got to figure out a way to get that in there. What were you going to say, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, sticking with the idea of it with the digital collectibles, like, I mean, I already do that system. You probably do it too with the, I forget what the Ubisoft one's called, coins, something.
You play the coins
and stuff.
You play rewards,
Helix.
And I get the coins for just you know, just playing the game. So I have a bunch of them. So every time I get like a new game, I just go and just buy whatever the with the loyalty coins. So if Sony wants to do that, sure, whatever.
It's great.
I run out of the Uplay coins. I'm fresh out because like I spend it all on Assassin's Creed shit. You know, sticking with the Assassin's Creed line. It's like they have all the good skins, the legacy skins. So
those are usually what those are for. Like
the new boat skins, dude.
Boat skins are sweet. I got a couple of those. And it's funny, I've never bought anything on the Uplay store. As in, I've never bought Helix coins, and I've never bought Uplay points. But I get them for doing stuff in the games. And if you're reviewing, you probably won't 100. If you could 100% a game if you wanted an Assassin's Creed, that'd be pretty rough on your psyche if you 100%ed an Assassin's Creed game. I'd need to talk to you about mental health. But you look at those games, you get a ton of coins for all those games. And what I love is the next game that comes out, being able to spend those. I actually think the Uplay way they do things makes a ton of sense. Being able to spend it, I played this old game. Oh, I jump into Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I can spend it. But what I don't like, and people who don't know about reviews don't know this, at least for me, almost every single Uplay game has the store off until it goes live. So I'll have some points and I'll see the items or I'll read about them. I'll be like, dude, I want this. I'm reviewing it. This could be awesome. And you go in and you hit the thing and it goes like, store error. And you're all, oh, you bastards. Like you can't. But it does stop reviewers from also buying themselves to winning the game too. Because you can't buy supplies, can't buy, you know, it's usually just the store shut down. But
what's cool over here too is that it appears that the points you get from playing those games on Sony, you could use for your Sony wallet, your PlayStation wallet, so playing a game and getting those achievements. So now trophies aren't just a dick measuring contest, right?
Yeah.
You can actually earn those trophies and use that to buy new games, which is pretty cool.
I like it because it's kind of like the Nintendo coin system.
Except worthwhile this time.
Yeah, because they really just throwing like half of a penny at you. And it takes like 10 years to be able to.
The world's worst interest rate. You're just like, yeah.
I actually cashed in on my Nintendo stuff and got like $10 out of it.
Doesn't Microsoft have some points somewhere too? I know I see like, I'll get flashes of stuff randomly from Microsoft, but I never read it. I think they do. And there's something about their store at times where you can get like money off on game cards or something. I don't know. I don't pay attention to that.
Yeah, you can get like money off like Pizza Hut or whatever. I'm just like, I just haven't spent any of that. So
come on, Gene, man. Pizza Hut, baby. I like Pizza Hut. I'm a fan. I don't know why.
Dude, me too.
Dude, I love it. I love it so bad for you. Oh, yeah. And you have to dab the top
they're so
of it.
Greasy,
the grease.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, the worst. I can't eat it anymore. Like, I just can't. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes me a little ill, too, but I'll still chaw it down.
Yeah.
But it is cool. We see these. Yeah. So PlayStation doing this is awesome. Microsoft has rewards, as somebody said. Thanks in chat, guys. Ed had brought up Microsoft rewards. And then you've got Nintendo, whatever they're doing. I don't know if Stadia does it. Probably. There's probably something there. Yeah, it's cool. I think trophies are quite literally the worst thing that's ever been invented when it comes to gaming. Like, I just find them to be asinine. But if you're going to connect a couple points to it, that does change it for me. Like, it would be, I wouldn't fight for those coins. But I'm saying, when somebody says they got a trophy, I know that that means a couple bucks, that, you know, and it's not an NFT, it's not play to earn, then I'm okay with that. Like that sounds pretty cool. So we'll have to track it. Has anybody figured out how much you have to work, let's say, to get one game? Has anybody done the math yet? Because I'm sure somebody's cracking open their math books, trying to figure out the math for how long you would need.
I mean,
to do
for a full game, I
for
bet
a $60 game, seven.
It's an insane amount, dude.
They just put the blog post, and on their blog post, it just stated that the different things you earn is by like playing a game every week or platinuming something, but they didn't really specify how it works and how many points you need to like buy a game.
So
other question I also have is the digital collectors. Is it going to be, are you going to be able to trade it or sell it to other players?
That was going to be my question. Yeah. Is it Steam cards is what I was wondering. Is like,
yeah,
is
they didn't hit that either. They just said the collectibles are there. I'm assuming if they bring back PlayStation Home, you'll be able to decorate your house with those collectibles or something. But yeah, I don't know if it's tradable or sellable on like your own like little player market.
Patha, 179. I can't remember again. I'm sorry that what that conversion is. Just dropped a super chat. Patha's always here. Thank you for being a fan. He says AC Unity is also really good aesthetically, and he's absolutely right. AC Odyssey, just so everybody knows, where Syndicate and most other AC games have come later on and used real-time lighting, the best part about Unity is they baked in the lighting. And it, and it's almost like what Spider-Man did. Spider-Man was like, okay, if you want to go tonight, we have to reload everything because they baked the lighting. And I know people want real-time everything, but it's like, if you can look at Unity without seeing the crowds go nuts and pop everywhere and disappear and do crazy shit. Like I still played it a couple days ago and the dude turned into a woman right in front of me.
Oh,
you're like,
no.
What the, it happens all the time, dude. They just, if you can look at Unity, step back from that, it's gorgeous. Yeah. Unity. I mean,
such a gorgeous game. It's my favorite Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, I mean, all power to you.
I mean,
I just had a lot of bugs, Gene. Like, that's the big thing with me is bugs. If I didn't have those and you can interact, imagine, I always say this, but imagine reading a book and page 78 was missing. You're just like, it's going to take you a little while to catch up just by drops of information. That's how, that was my experience with Unity. So, it's gorgeous.
It's real cleaned up and it's 60 FPS on PS4 and on PS5.
Isn't that crazy?
So I think so, yeah. So,
oh, 60 on PS4. Damn.
Yeah. And that was nuts. Part of the problem. Like, technically, when it launched, it was ahead of probably.
It was just way too big for its britches.
And Syndicate was the pullback after that. And they pulled back probably a bit too far technically.
Yeah,
on Syndicate comparative.
Yeah, because London was pretty empty in terms of the street crowds. So,
not anymore.
Beautiful buildings, though.
I'm pretty sure they patched that as well, if I remember right. Because I'm playing that. It's very busy. In fact, funny enough, he was saying too much. It might be too busy. You get the carts and the horses, and sometimes you'd be like, that doesn't look like that's going to be a safe. Where you see like four different carts and horses going towards the same intersection, AC has never been able to handle that kind of stuff very well. Anyway, but this is cool, man. I mean, it's good. Now's the time, guys. A lot of people say gaming is dead right now. You know, until Stray comes out or whatever. You guys you're dead wrong. Cyberpunk has had a bunch of patches. You've got the PC. Throw some flying cars in there and your mod. Throw a ton of mods in there. It's a good time. You just have to look in a slightly different way. You know, not in that AAA space, maybe, unless you're revisiting something. What were you gonna say, Johnny?
No, I think you're right. It's just there aren't any AAA big hitters, but there are a lot of games. We'll get to them, yeah. And it's a great time too to like stuff you missed. We talked about Sifu. A lot of people missed that because it came out during the Elden Ring hubbub, for example.
We got a super chat. Pac90 asks $2 Canadian bucks, and I think we're matched up perfectly with Canadian bucks right now, if I remember right.
Oh,
yeah. A lot of other places are having troubles, and I think finally U.S. money is actually worth something.
Yeah, they put I think we're the matched with the dollar and the euro.
Yeah, we
matched
are
for the first time in like 20 years.
Dude, remember when you were a kid, Mike? Remember back in the day when Canadian money meant nothing, and you'd have a Canadian coin, and the store would be like, it's worth like 1 cent versus 10 or whatever. And then after a while, all this stuff in the euro, you're like, the euro's been ahead of the dollar for years. But he wants to know, can you guys rank your top three Assassin's Creed games?
Best top ever.
I'll just say the top three I enjoyed: Rogue, Syndicate, and Odyssey. Odyssey might be my favorite, man.
Black Flag, Brotherhood, Origins.
Brotherhood's a good one, man.
I separate AC by eras. There's three different eras.
Yeah. There is, yeah.
And each of those is the, to me, best game of their specific era.
Yeah.
Mine is the same as Mike, except instead of Origins is Unity, but Origins is like close four. I love Origins. But it's AC, Unity, Brotherhood, and Black Flag, for sure.
Brotherhood and Black Flag. Brotherhood, I, for some reason, thought that wasn't super popular, but I guess it is. And Brotherhood was fantastic.
It's just fantastic. Almost so perfect.
Yeah. What about you, Abzi?
Odyssey 2, and this is going to be a fucking weird one, but 3. So,
dude, 3 was so popular when it first came
out.
And then I enjoyed it, dude.
I think we revised our history with 3, and now people were like less excited about 3, because I remember when 3 came out and I wasn't in love with it, getting a lot of heat. But then as the years have gone by, it's almost a little bit of revisionist history. I think 3 is fairly popular. It's pretty popular.
It still starts really bad for me, you know, because like
when you're playing as Haytham.
Yeah, because you just play as Haythem for like 7-8 hours, you know, and it's like, okay, well,
I like
I'm really not doing any open world, but I like Haythem as a character. So
if you like but you're not open world. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, you're not open world, so you're just not really playing the game. But Haythem is a fun character. So if you really, really get into that, then like more power to you. So.
But then he goes away, and now you're stuck. That's what happened to me. Is I enjoyed Haythem, and then I lost him because and I was like, oh, what about you, Johnny? Top three.
So the one that made me fall in love with the games was I think it's two. The one with Ezio Salvatore, right? That's number two, I think.
Yes.
It's yeah, so
two is great.
Yeah, I think it was number two. I absolutely loved the character and stuff like that. But in terms of fun, definitely Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I think they have the perfect like jam, the perfect formula just for fun. And but I loved Syndicate for the setting because, of course, I live in London, so I recognize a lot of the places, and I love the banter between the two characters and stuff, which is very unique.
I'll also say something, guys, if you want to, other than Kingdom Come Deliverance, I think Kingdom Come Deliverance probably has the best DLC packages, maybe aside from Witcher 3. Their DLC for Kingdom Come is unbelievable. But AC's DLCs are almost always good, which is, there's been, Far Cry's had some bad ones, but Assassin's Creed, almost all of the DLCs I've ever played, I've been stunned at how good they are. And I know some people didn't like Druid for this, for Valhalla, which I get. But Ragnarok is just really fun. And it's funny to look back on some of the DLCs for these and just be like, holy shit, like they hit that. In fact, one of the guys in the Discord was saying it's too bad they couldn't get the DLC people to make a full game. Because obviously they sort of, it's like, but you know what? DLC gets to have their way too. I do know some people at Ubisoft, and it's like, it's a little freer on the DLC, obviously. You know, it's a little bit, they're not worried as much. And so you do get the, like Jack the Ripper, the King Tyrant, or George the Tyrant, when George Washington was a bad guy.
The tyranny of King George. Yeah.
Thank you. Boy, did I get that completely fucking wrong. I went to the wrong nation. Anyway, those kind of things are awesome. I love it.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey's DLC, I like it better than base game, you know? It's just fantastic.
Fate of Atlantis.
Fate of Atlantis is so good.
They just go fucking unhinged.
The Origins DLC was crazy, too.
When you're fighting all the gods, and I'm telling you, I just wish they would. It's almost like Phoenix Rising. I don't know. I don't think I've talked to these two. I love Phoenix Rising, and one of the reasons why is I feel that it is a little bit of a comical Assassin's Creed game. And
I need to get back to that game. Yeah.
I adored that game, and I think that's why, is because it's like AC, but it's just like they just kick
rocks. It's like they let their hair down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like the main AC proper, they're like, no, we have to stay within bounds.
Yeah.
And then, guys, this is DLC. Fucking anything goes, right?
That's also like the thing, like, you got to think about in terms of like everyone's like, you know, like when they make an AC game, like a proper mainline AC game, like they're sitting here thinking, okay, we can make a world, but it also has to be at least somewhat near reality. Like they really care about that shit, which limits some of the things
powers,
you can do in terms of level design.
And level design,
like Elden Ring is fantastic, but part of the magic of Elden Ring is you can be like, okay, here's a poison swamp, and then here's the Erd tree.
Yeah,
and then here's a cavern under the, and you can't do that with base Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So true.
Oh yeah. This one foot in, one foot out type of thing where it's like a little bit offensive. Yeah. Sometimes
you do get
people off.
You pisses
people. It's like, it's not historically accurate. You know, so.
It's funny too, cause this is all I've been doing is studying Assassin's Creed games. And one of the things they talk about is when they went to push Valhalla. So everybody thinks that the posters for Valhalla meant they were already doing a Valhalla. And that's actually not necessarily true. And one of the things they did is they had an 8-hour presentation ready for the top people at for Valhalla, their top managers. And they're like, we want to do this Viking game. They had an 8-hour presentation ready. They show up, and within 30 minutes, they were like, for sure, we're doing Valhalla for sure. Like, we love this idea. And what blew me away was a good number of the excellent parts of Valhalla is from Guise, the CEO. He came in and was talking to him, and I don't want to spoil my entire walking the walk, but he came in, and you can find this data if you want to watch some videos, but he came in and was like, is this in the game? And they were all, no, not right now. And he's like, dude, wouldn't that be cool? And then the developers were like, that would be cool. And it's actually one of the things of Valhalla is known for. They have a lot of cool history around how they make a game, regardless if you love them or not, you know. And that's why I want to see
I really like Valhalla. I liked it a lot.
I'm liking it better now, for sure. I think that those games, guys, whether you even like them or not, you can still look at them and say that. Like, I don't like Unity as much as you guys, but it's hard for me to say it's not quality. And I might be the only one here who played Liberation, which was the ex-slave who she becomes an assassin. It was a PSP.
I loved it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have the, it was Vita. And
Vita.
I have the Vita, the white one that came with Liberation.
Oh, gotcha. I enjoyed that game. What else do we got for, we got some super chats. Johnny, look up the next, topic while I read these.
Got it.
Subverge Gaming, $5 super chat. I always enjoy the podcast, guys. AC games have their faults, but they're just loads of fun. Odyssey looked amazing and was great fun. And by the way, that's what this podcast today is probably going to be about, is about fun versus like the critique. Space Martyr 90, $9.99 super chat. Again, thank you guys for the super chats. We never do sponsors and stuff. This is what keeps us alive. He says, for making my workday better in the Arizona heat. Wish you the best, Gene.
Hey, thanks, Dead Space. I appreciate that, man.
And it brings up something, because right below that, somebody said Primal. We could do an entire podcast on Primal. We won't. What do we got for topics?
Well, I
could
talk about Primal forever. Deep dive on Primal. Someday I'll play it, and we'll do dive. We'll
do... Dude, I would love to do... I do the Patreon podcast. Yeah, let's... If you guys play we'll it, Abzi's played some of it, and we'll just do a Patreon podcast.
I'll play it again, all of it.
About Far Cry Primal. No HUD.
I'm in. No HUD deep dive, dude.
That's awesome. Okay. As Mike looks so stone-faced, because he probably didn't like Primal. Did you like Primal?
No, I like Primal.
Oh, okay. Just the Primal look was...
The thing is about that...
HUD is like... I understand HUDless people. I just can't... I could not play.
No, no,
Primal's
the thing,
probably Mike. The closest.
Just, here's the thing. No HUD experience, Mike.
It's not about like just like being a... So I played it originally with a HUD on, and I was like, I didn't really enjoy it that much, because I was like, oh, it's a Far Cry reskin set in caveman era, you know? But then these guys told me, dude, just play it with no HUD. I went back into it, and I played it with no HUD, and it was like a caveman simulator. I was like, damn, this game is sick.
It's not only that.
I don't know what it is about it.
I can tell you. It's because you're not going from point A to B and forgetting everything. It's like you drive. Mm-hmm. Have you ever driven and an hour goes by and you're like, what happened? And you're at your point. That is when you're guided by an arrow. And when you, dude, the ability in Primal to go, I know the swamp's on the left. I know the red bad guys are over here. It's, you engage in the game world, man. And it's like with Valhalla, you did some footage for me for the Walking the Walk, and I did it as well with no HUD and some HUD for sure. But turning the HUD off, when somebody says, like, there's something, Ubisoft is pretty good about giving you hints of where you need to go, like they're to the north or whatever. And you find that out, and then riding and having to look like a real person on a horse, having to like identify. Mm-hmm. Where that village is, or
that seems
smoke.
Difficult, dude. Because even with map, I got lost sometimes in Valhalla.
No, I agree. I agree. That's why I said sometimes. Sometimes they do not get hints, and sometimes you're like, "How am I supposed to know this?"
Yeah, it's like Elden Ring, where you familiarize yourself with the world so much more, and you know where everything is.
Yeah,
much more than with a map.
What have we got?
With a Valhalla map, is just so gigantic.
No, dude, it's huge. It's huge. And did you know that they truncated that by 95%? So I won't get into it, but yeah, yeah, it's in my video, but basically they measured out how big a trip from east to west would be, and they turned it into about a six total real miles versus it's like 1,200. And they were discussing how they truncated it and how
I
they
have
put
a
things,
feeling
because they were like, players will just die. To me, that's not me. I would say I wish there was a mod where I could be like, make this thing real sized. I want to take 6 hours to go. What are we gonna say, John?
Well, I have a feeling your Walking the Walk is going to make me go back to that game, because I don't think I gave it a fair shake. I kind of dropped out.
No, you might have.
30, like maybe 20 hours in, I dropped out and never came back into it. So I think there's more there to look
at. I'm ready to reinstall it right now. I'm ready to reinstall it, because the last time I played it, I got Mjolnir. And I was like, hell yeah, I got like the final thing in the game that I wanted. And then I just stopped playing it. And I was like, I just realized I never actually played a lot of the game with Mjolnir in it. So I should just go back and just start wrecking shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fun game. I love Valhalla.
I played like 70 hours of it. And then I was like, okay, I'm done.
And
that's enough.
It's so funny, because when I was talking to people, and I'm sure you guys as reviewers, I reviewed it and I was like, listen, it's not bad, but it's not, you know, it's just not really for me. And people were playing 4 hours of it and were like, it's the most amazing Assassin's Creed game. And I was like, wait till you play the, you know, you're going to have to go. I played it
hour 140.
Wait till you get to hour, or even hour 60. And if you believe hour 60 is that good, then I'll accept your argument and be like, I you know, I'm not working out for you. And we had an entire thread in our Reddit where people are like, holy shit. Like, I have a new respect for people who have to review the game, because it's like, you think you get these front-loaded games, right? You get these front-loaded games where there's a lot of action, there's a lot of this, and people 3-4 hours in are like, greatest game ever. You look on Steam, Steam reviews will say, hours in-game, 1.8, greatest game ever. And you're like, dude, it's Elden Ring. How the fuck do you know that? It's
yeah,
Elden Ring.
Yeah.
I will say Elden Ring's one of those games that I felt right up until the end I was discovering new stuff. That's I think that's one of those games where, like, there was just stuff throughout it that I was always
and the world that they crafted is built for that, and it's crafted in such a way that, you know, under each corner there's always something new to find, and again, part of that is the fact that they're not tied to any reality, so you can just say, hey, under here there's a cavern with starry skies in it, and
exactly,
like, you're coming up on new things because you can put anything anywhere,
and at the same time,
spoiler alert, it ends with a castle in the sky, you know, it's amazing.
And at the same time, they do a very good job at environmental storytelling, you know, when you start looking at the you know, for example, the crypts or whatever they were called, the catacombs, and you see the roots of the Erd tree, and now these dead people are there, or like Caelid obviously with the rot, and you know, even their imagination is just, and their level design combined.
This is a game that I got hammered as well. But when I did the walk in the walk for it, I talked to Total Biscuit about it, because he and I had pretty we agreed somewhat on Mad Max, but there were some things we didn't. And I did that Mad Max walk in the
rules.
Walk. And he and I talked, and he's like, dude, he's like, now I see. He's like, I guess I just wasn't not playing it right. But he's like, I was thinking about it differently. And he liked some bits, but once he started playing, and he luckily that I think that was the only walking walk he had ever watched. But we started talking about it, he was like, holy shit, like that game's got a ton as well. It's a game that I think got lost by Metal Gear, if I remember right.
Yeah, Metal Gear Phantom Pain,
Metal Gear Phantom Pain, sort of desert, right?
Yeah.
Can't do it, baby.
Bearded guy and bearded white guy, right? Yeah. So
it's like, okay, right. Generic protagonist number 7. Scott. For $5 super chat says, Phoenix Rising's last DLC was amazing. Changed the way the whole game played.
Yeah, that was the overhead one. But it, like you're talking about like Valhalla and like hour 5 and hour 60. And like I said prior to us starting to record, when I was playing Valhalla, I didn't have, that was the first one I didn't have to review the base game. Mm-hmm. And so the length of it doesn't become a problem when it's just a thing that you're hopping
doing
into,
whenever
you know whenever it, I felt like it.
It must be like reading like book series, like you're just reading A Song of Ice and Fire at your own pace, you know, as opposed to like just like trying to speed read through it the whole time. You're like, okay, I got to get to the next chapter. Okay, I got next week to finish this book, you know.
I think it's not about the length for me, but the one thing that really, you know, caused me to actually quit was the, you know, how treasure is hid behind the locked doors.
Dude, the locked doors.
Always the same thing over and over.
And then you're always calling somebody to help you push the thing.
How do people access this location?
Dude, that's the big one. I'm at a bar, I remembered when I got to this in the Walk in the Walk, I remembered this part flummoxing me when I was reviewing it. And I got to it, and I walked up a hill, and I'm like, I actually got like the weird battery acid taste of Doom in my mouth, where I was like, oh no, this is that one. And then I got mad. I'm like, I'm not looking online. I got to remember. It took me, dude, it was probably 2.5 hours. And I found it in the most obscure way possible. It was where I left in an anger fit. I'm like, fuck you. And I jumped on my horse and I ran. And then I turned back around and what do I see? Like a little tiny clove over in the corner, a little tiny bay. And I'm like, I wonder. And I go around and that's the way in. And I was like, that's the only way I found that. Because I would be standing above it many times going, where's the entrance? And I'm literally like on it at that time. You know, just like, the game definitely needed some randomization in that kind of setup. What do we got for other topics, Johnny? We got anything
Nintendo acquires animation studio that will become Nintendo Pictures.
Yep. So that is Dynamo Studio, which previously they did cutscenes for. Man, I'm just pulling it up. So it was Dynamo Studio who did cutscenes for Death Stranding and Persona 5, and they did post-production work on Metroid Other M. And they just acquired them and changed from Dynamo Pictures to Nintendo Pictures.
And
that's crazy.
So what's the idea that they'll do Nintendo IPs as like Sonic, but
for they want to hit up TV and movies and stuff.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah, and it's very slight.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But like Nintendo has been pretty slow to do this multimedia stuff. They got Illumination, of course, doing Mario, which will do fine. I don't know if it'll be good, but it'll do
right.
Fine.
Yeah.
But some of the other stuff, they've been really slow. Like there was apparently the rumored Zelda thing for Netflix, and then later apparently that coming out kiboshed that deal because Nintendo is just really slow.
Yeah.
And you see everybody else making that jump, and I guess Nintendo's like, you know, maybe we should have like a Zelda animated thing. Maybe we should have an F-Zero. Like, well, they had an F-Zero anime a while ago, this like Captain Falcon prequel, but it wasn't great. And that's generally, I guess, why Nintendo has avoided it. Wasn't great, but if they have control over it, maybe they could do something. Like, that's the hope.
I mean, hey, dude, those guys are 20, 30, 40 years behind everybody else when it comes to entertainment and how they deliver it. And they've got good games, which is great. But I need those guys to step forward, man. I need them to be like, because they're Switch, they're like, we're in the middle of our Switch generation and people are buying Steam Decks. It's like, they're way beyond in power, but their games are good. And I would love to watch a cartoon, anime, whatever you want to say. I would love to watch one of those if it was done well. But Nintendo's so fucking slow, I feel like it'll take them 15 years to okay even their own development team's cartoon. Like, I hope not. I hope they just give them an IP and say make it.
I think they're just really worried. Like the live action Mario movie, like scared them a lot.
Bob Hoskins, that, right? Was that Bob Hoskins?
Yeah, yeah, and that carried forward until now. And even now, you look at stuff like Resident Evil just came out on Netflix, which
true.
I've heard is not great as a Resident Evil adaptation.
Oh, I watched it,
but fine as. Oh. A show?
I have so many thoughts on it.
You do. You do. And I've read all of his Twitter on this. Go for it, Gene.
Yeah, it's the weirdest video game adaptation I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Where it has everything to do with the game and nothing to do with the game. Like you cannot watch this and think, oh, this is just like the game. But then you watch later of it and it's like, oh, they really played the games. The ones you get later on where they're going into like deep lore and
lore,
like
deep
references.
Lore. Yep.
Deep lore, and like it's crazy. A lot of the show isn't that good, especially with like the young high school drama stuff. And maybe if you're like into young adult stuff, then that might work. Like I think it works a lot better in Ms. Marvel than say Resident Evil, which is such a weird thing to say,
right? Teen drama in Resident Evil doesn't really
drama in Resident Evil doesn't That's really so make weird. Sense, right? But if you watch it as like a Lance Reddick show. Lance Reddick does so many crazy.
My favorite actor.
Yeah. He there is so much of him, and he does so much in his show, and he is so entertaining to watch. And like, you know, he's Albert Wesker, and then one of the central mysteries of the show is why is he Albert Wesker, and what is Albert Wesker doing here?
Right.
And then so they really really follow up on that. So if you get really interested in and invested in Albert Wesker and Lance Reddick's portrayal of him, which I don't understand how you cannot. Then you can find yourself a really, really good show. Because I ended up fast-forwarding through a lot of the stuff that I didn't like the future apocalypse stuff. because like
Lance Reddick, the guy from Fringe and Horizon,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah. Quantum Break.
I love him, dude.
Yeah,
and he's in Destiny too. So
true. Yeah, and he went on the Eric Andre show.
Zavala. Yeah, and he was out on Eric Andre's show. He's everywhere. He's John Wick's weapon master.
Well, in fact, the Netflix show, they're saying that he's going to, which is just about the hotel itself, they're going to show some of him in that as well, which is the Netflix TV show.
He portrays super or villains.
I love him in everything, man. In Fringe, he's a good guy in one and a bad. Well, he's mostly good, but he's chaotic good. But he, dude, when he talks, he reminds me of the guy who runs the Del Tor, the Roman guard or the Roman gladiators in Spartacus. There's other actor who does that. I tweeted both of them and I said, please, you both need to be in like a police TV procedural, because I adore both those actors.
He's in Bosch too.
He's in Bosch and he's awesome in that as well. Dude, that guy shows up and when he talks, I'm like,
he owns the room, dude. He's like, he's there.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so good. So Netflix does Resident Evil, Netflix has Castlevania, Netflix is doing all these stuff. Is there an IP?
Cyberpunk.
And that one looks good, by the way.
Yeah,
I think the new one looks good. I was going to ask you guys, is there an IP you would love to see? It can be a movie too, TV show. It doesn't have to be a cartoon. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular IP you guys would like to see Netflix or Amazon take on?
From Nintendo or in general?
In general, because I think Nintendo, we know what they're going to do. I could be wrong, but I think Nintendo, it's going to be a main platform title. So we sort of know the two or three main titles.
Yeah.
Zelda.
So is there
Splatoon show. Hell yeah.
A Splatoon show.
Sign me up for that. That would be a good young adult show.
Young adult show. Is there any others you guys can think of? Something that like... any game? They did Dragon's Dogma, which didn't turn out well.
Maybe a God of War, either animated or live action of Kratos, maybe prior to the events of God of War 1. Between 3 and 4, like how he
got there.
How he got there.
Dude, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. I love that. That's awesome.
With Christopher Judge, please.
Well, he could.
Maybe a Sekiro thing, because they have really cool story in that.
They do, and there's a lot of lore in Sekiro that I just think that even though people love it, they don't hold it as like in the same weird regard as a battle. What's the other one? Bloodborne. Those other ones. I think
true.
That they just, which, so I would like to see Sekiro over Bloodborne. I would actually. I mean, I like the ideas of Bloodborne, but those are good examples. Any from you, Mike? Anything you want to see?
Probably Yakuza.
Oh,
come on.
And to be specific here, like part of the problem I think that they have with game adaptations is, let's tell the same story with the same characters.
Right.
You're like on the thing, and you're never going to make that work. But the Yakuza series, kind of like Ichiban, like a new character, but with that same weird ass Yakuza energy. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much an anime already, right?
Yeah. I don't know if anyone's seen the movie by
Miike.
It's just got this weird energy to it. And that's the part.
Like a Kung Fu Hustle.
Yeah, that he really captured. Like, it's serious and emotional, but also wacky. So like a Yakuza set in Kamurocho with a new character, but carrying that energy. Like that's
which is why Cyberpunk will work as an anime, because it's like, you know, you don't have to have V and Keanu Reeves in there. You just set it in Night City and it'd be cool, you know?
Dude, yeah, Ryuji as a main character would be amazing. He's like the villain from Kiwami 2, and like his story would be great. Mm.
So the thing about Yakuza, I think Yakuza might be the de facto generic answer, now that I think about it. That fits. Yeah, I mean, I sort of would want my... Yeah, I actually think Yakuza is probably one of the best answers. And one of the reasons why is because, like you said, already an anime. You're throwing people's crotches into light poles. You're doing the weirdest shit ever. You're dressing up like schoolgirls to do jobs. You've got the babies, the men babies.
It practically itself.
It writes
itself. You throw in a little karaoke.
Hire a couple people that used to work on The Simpsons when it was considered good. Yeah. And be like, dude, let's come up with an out of this... Now, remember... United States in particular, our censors would be all over it. People would be bitching all over the internet. And that's what I want. I want people to be uncomfortable. And Yakuza is a perfect example of we're playing it and we see it and we're at least me, when I play Yakuza, some of the missions, like, you know, schoolgirl teacher, and I'm like, whoosh, you know, like, that's, it's not a joke here as much as it might be in Japan.
But I mean,
want them to make it a joke. I like that uncomfortable feeling, and I would love to see them do that and just be like, this is our stuff, man. This is in the game. What are you gonna say, Johnny?
Well, I was just gonna say, we have some really risque stuff that's out there, like The Boys, that I know a lot of you guys
you're right.
So I think
The Boys is too over the top, though, Johnny. If you compare it to Yakuza, when we go over the top to the point where he's masturbating on all of New York at the end of
the first,
yeah. And by the way, Amazon did not want that. They were like, you can't masturbate on New
really?
York. And the writers were like, why? And they were like, New Yorkers will find you. Like, they were fine. They were like, no. And I think he's done it two or three times, whatever. But I mean, it's over the top. And I think they get away with it.
And see, if you nail Yakuza, then what you can also do is say, all right, now that you understand what Yakuza is, we're going to do it in different places. So, yep.
Which we all want,
same,
right? Which
bring
we all
that want. Energy yeah. to like Boston gangsters.
Dude.
Like yeah. just weird.
Or where like Russian and Boston gangsters against each other. You could do some crazy
you could do
shit.
So much,
those
so
cultures
much fun
are coming
shit.
Together. Yeah.
Like,
that's
and,
a good
and
idea.
Just
man.
Set it in there in the same way that the money heist shows are yeah. like in different countries and it has that flavor of that country. But you got to start with Yakuza.
You got to start with the one that gamers will also back up in their discussions and
for
that
sure.
everybody sort of
for
knows.
Sure.
That's
get
one
the
thing.
Groundswell.
You get the groundswell, yeah. And it's honestly, guys, we all know what caused a groundswell for fantasy, which was Lord of the Rings, because there had been a ton of B movies that were swords and sorcerers. It took them to finally do Lord of the Rings, and you start getting these other shows and movies. Without Lord of the Rings, we probably wouldn't see anything on Amazon that even remotely looks like. It takes a while. Like where people become, oh, it's not nerdy. For example, I was watching a poker game that was from 10 years ago. It was just a high stakes poker game. And one of them was joking about magic. And one of the long-term poker guys was like, have you ever heard about girls? And I was like, that is the most dated comment I think I've ever heard on YouTube. Like that's so old, right? The thought processes and I wasn't dissing on him that at that time I would have made the joke, but you see it now moving forward, and the things that you could do with Yakuza and push the acceptance a little bit of things being quirky. I think The Boys has done that, though. You're right, Johnny. The Boys is
it's the age of nerds now. Nerds are
it is.
Thing, you
know? It is.
Yeah, and if you can,
unfortunately, kind of.
Exactly.
Kind of.
If you can find it, fine. It's by Takahashi Miike, and it's the Yakuza movie. But he also did a later one. Much recently, Yakuza Apocalypse, which isn't related, but also you should watch that. It's
but
nonsense.
Is related to the Yakuza games.
It
in
is
some
not.
Way?
It is not.
It is not.
Not Apocalypse.
It is
no.
Not Apocalypse. It is about a Yakuza dude who finds out that his boss is a vampire, and then things happen, and it is the weirdest shit. But it's that same energy that he had for the Yakuza movie. Just in his own, it's you can find Yakuza Apocalypse on Amazon Prime. I think you can rent it.
Jan, $10 super chat. Hi everybody, enjoying the show. Thank you very much, Jan, for the super chat. What else do we got there, Johnny, for topics?
Well, you guys mentioned that the writing team for the new Fable is now led by Control co-creator, and Abzi added that this person also wrote AC Syndicate and Dishonored: Death of the Outsider.
Yep, really? She wrote for she wasn't the lead there, but she wrote for them. Like I think one of them was like a scriptwriter and the other one was like a cutscene director or something like that. And she is leading the new Fable story. And I love Death of the Outsider. I didn't play Syndicate. And obviously Control is crazy, wacky, cool.
Yeah,
weird because I figured Fable would be further along, but
well, yeah, that's true, too, because they announced it, like, 5 years ago. but I do think the Control's, like, weird vibe kind of fits with Fable, which also goes into, like, such random, like, dreamy places. So, like, I could totally see that working. We just won't see Fable in forever, pretty much, which, given that, you know, because they haven't even written a goddamn story, for Christ's sake. God damn it.
Yeah, it just shows how far along it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Gene, can you do me a favor? Can you put the mic on the inside of your sleeve or on the inside of your cuff on your, it's banging.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Is this?
It's that. Yeah. Right now? It was that.
Okay.
Was
okay. It's this one because I was touching it. That's why.
Oh. Fun. Oh. Okay. I was just. Yeah. But.
Sorry.
So no, that's all right. So the thing about Fable. Yeah. Nothing.
Yep. Nothing.
Remember how Ken Levine got a bunch? One of the things I hate is when I joke about it with Death Stranding for sure. And I'm the first to admit that Artur, you know, the artist, the high end, you know, no one can touch his creative mind. And Ken's like that too. But they also then get dragged into this uncomfortable conversation where if they ever change their ideas, people are like, oh, he's just being difficult. Well, the thing that happens, especially with a Microsoft or whatever, is sometimes there's not enough oversight. And this is what everybody worried about with Death Stranding. I know we worried about it because we talked about it. We were like, oh, by himself without somebody over the top of him, what are we going to get? The shit's not going to make any sense. And that's sort of what we got, but it still turned out good for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Fable, dude, it's going to be a long time. And the idea of it being rebooted is not too crazy to think of. And Playground Games, who has amazing chops on their games, was not forced to do their games on a specific time frame either. And even though they hired a whole, you know, they got a whole new development group and stuff, I think people need to be prepared that Fable shouldn't even really be talked about, especially if they're just now getting a writer.
Absolutely. That's crazy.
It's unfortunate. It is. That's one of the problems with Microsoft. Too much money can hurt too. You know, where you sit back and you're like, we'll just let it happen. And sometimes what you need to do is put somebody in charge who's like, no, it needs to happen. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference mm-hmm. in game creation. What else have we got?
So, well, one thing I wanted to mention is there is a new expansion for Gwent that came out. And I wanted to ask if you guys are Gwent fans, because let me tell you, I played a lot of Gwent in The Witcher 3, guys. It was embarrassing. I know I was supposed to rescue Ciri, but if I didn't challenge every single NPC to Gwent, I don't, you know. Have you guys played at all the Gwent game?
No.
Unfortunately, I never played card games after Triple Triad and Final Fantasy VIII, where I was absolutely obsessed with Triple Triad, and it was the only thing I played. It was the only thing I played, and I was like challenging like every boss and like every character that was about to die, and like, hey, you want to play cards first? So after that, I was like, this ruined like the Final Fantasy VIII experience for me. So like, I'm just not going to play these ancillary card games, because like, if I played Gwent, like that would probably just have been the Witcher 3 experience for me too, because it is a fun card game. And I was just like, I'm just not going to play this, but like, so which is why it's great news that there is a Gwent game coming out, and it's like, okay, that's fantastic. Like there's nothing to like break.
There's nothing you have to break away from. You can just play it when you want to play it.
Yeah. I guess it's a play card now. That's fine.
Yeah. I didn't like, I didn't get into the PvP one because I'm not a fan of card PvP games, because it boils down to who has the better cards, or I don't know. I'm not really
most of the time,
but
it does.
Most of the time. But I love Thronebreaker. I think it's a great game.
Great game.
It incorporated Gwent in a lot of different ways, where you had like puzzle games that involved Gwent, and they did. They had enough improvements from Witcher to make it feel like its own thing. So I really enjoyed that one. And Rogue Mage looks like it's a roguelike in the Gwent game, but it seems like it has mixed reviews. I'm not sure.
John Martin, $10 super chat, on vacation this week and can actually be here. Love the show. Rock on. Thank you for the $10. Hopefully we didn't strand you. Is your like your last $10 for gas you spent on the podcast? He's sitting on the edge of the road just listening to the podcast with an empty car. I appreciate you throwing that money our way. Gwent, I've never touched, so I wouldn't know. I mean, I played a little bit in Witcher 3, but I wasn't a fan.
Yeah, I played
you didn't. Man, you didn't like it in Witcher 3?
I like Witcher 3.
You didn't get into it?
I didn't like Gwent.
Like Gwent,
it's just like Valhalla has a fun little dice game.
Oh,
I played it
one.
A little bit. I liked it, but I didn't stick. I will tell you this. If you put a fishing game in your fucking game, expect Carrick to spend at minimum 20 hours in a fishing, because there's something about the dual layer
so
game
funny,
that I die for. When Red Dead had fishing, I was like, oh no, I'm screwed.
Dude,
because
there
like,
have
I would
been
spend
two
hours.
Games. There have been two games that when we discussed the game, I was like, wait, there is a fishing game? I think like Final Fantasy 15, Far Cry 5.
Yeah, Far Cry 5.
I went into
get
the discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about the game. I'm like, dude, I played the whole game. I didn't know you could fish.
Pretty much every JRPG I've played has fishing in it as well. Every single JRPG.
Yeah.
Very typical.
Yeah. Fire Emblem, fucking Tales.
Near Automata. Like,
all of them do.
We were asked a question. I want to roll up here. Oh, it was a question about Skate going free to play and changing its name from Skate 4
to Skate.
To Skate.
And they're doing a game as a service, so it's going to be a continuous.
Well, I think that's why they changed the name. Like, you don't want a sequel. Yeah. You want a game that doesn't have a number, so no one expects the next one. You know?
Yeah.
And we'll see that with Madden. When Madden or whatever, one of the football games finally decides that they're going to have the platform start on a certain year, I bet you it'll just be dropped. It'll just be like Madden NFL or whatever. And from that point on, no numbers. I don't know, man. Do you guys like Skate? Is Skate a big deal for any of you guys?
I've always been a Tony Hawk's person.
Mm-hmm.
So I never actually played the Skate games myself. Are they multiplayer?
Yeah.
Usually?
Yeah, I think so.
They can be. I don't have a problem with the idea per se.
You're not happy about it, Mike.
A lot of people automatically hear free to play or microtransactions and they're like, I don't necessarily believe that. I believe that it can be tuned poorly.
Absolutely. Lost Ark, for instance.
Right. And I play Genshin, I play Fate Grand Order, which are both free to play games. I don't necessarily think that EA will it'd be the same if Take-Two announced that they were doing a free to play skateboard game. I'd be like, you guys have four rules.
They shared four rules on it, and they said no pay to win, no map areas locked behind a paywall, no paid loot boxes, and no paid gameplay advantages. So most likely cosmetics.
It's cosmetic. Here's the problem with cosmetic. Guys, let's talk about Forza Horizon, which I love. They had a bunch of clothing, and you looked like a goober unless you spent real money. And I showed that in my review. I'm like, look at this dude. No one would wear this outside. That's what you get unless you buy. And by the way, I love the game, so I'm not even interested in looking cool. I'm playing a racing game. But that's this cosmetic thing gets sold as a positive when it's like, as long as you can look pretty good, normally that's one
same
thing. But remember NBA and my review of that, where you had to buy dye for your hair and your beard, or they wouldn't be the same
separately.
Color.
Separately.
You had to spend cash to make...
Like Riders Republic is another good example where they're almost there, but the cosmetic items that you can buy cost just a bit too much.
Oh yeah, that math has been done, right?
Like if you get that price down, probably like cut it in half for Riders Republic, it'd be fine.
Do you also notice where a lot of times they purposely do the change conversion so that you always have $1 less than you're
supposed
to?
A little bit, actually. Yeah, that's
dude,
just
every in time.
God damn it.
Every time you're playing a game, it's like, oh, $10 for a mount. You can buy gold coins in $9 increments. And you're like, what?
So you can buy extra and then you'll have a little bit left.
Dude, we're going to transform it into diamonds and then put it into horseshoes and then smash that into a gold. And by the time you get to silver, you've lost $800 because they also add a fee to it. And you're just like, come on, guys. Well, they are
That's
close.
What
you're
scares
right.
me.
Like,
That's what close. Scares me about cosmetic microtransactions is that once they say, oh, it's only cosmetic, that means, well, we're going to get trash cosmetics that we can earn. I'm a fan of the, well, that's probably, you know, dreamlike thinking, but I'm a fan of being able to earn the same stuff, but with a lot more grinding versus like buy it and get it now, at least, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll have to see how they roll out. I'll give them a chance. I mean, Genshin Impact turned out, well, Lost Ark is probably the one I always hear about that turned out really well. Like Lost Ark, I would say it's very impossible to really have an issue with that. Like there's so much there that, once you do get to a point, I get it, but you've probably already played 60 hours prior to that, so...
Yeah, and you can earn pretty cool-looking shit through the game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can earn pretty cool-looking shit.
What were you going to say, Johnny?
Well, I was just going to say we have some great examples of successful free-to-play that have used that strategy. You know, Dota 2, the community loves the cosmetic structure and how you can get them if you want. League of Legends, the same. Path of Exile, the same. Genshin, I know that despite the gacha element, there are many ways where you can basically almost for free just, you know, get what you want.
I have a question for you, Johnny, real quick, because I didn't track that game too much. Is gacha meaning we got you to spend money? Is that what it's short for? I don't know what it's short for.
So it's short for gachapon, which is a Japanese, you probably see them. Actually, we have them in the U.S. and Canada as well. The, you know, in front of grocery stores, you put a coin in. Yeah, you turn in, you get a little capsule.
That's what they were called?
Those are the capsule things are called gacha.
I see. Oh, okay.
And so gacha games are based on that same idea. You put money in, you don't know what you're going to get out.
Okay. Gambling.
And it's essentially the same as it's just the loot boxes before.
Yeah, so it's generally right, Mike. It's with the characters because, I mean, Genshin is the only one that I've played of that type. But, like, if you want this character, you can't just outright buy it. You have to roll for it. There are ways where you can just go to eBay and pay $2 and, like, buy that character. Like, you buy an account that has that character, which is why I said, you know, if you look into it, you can spend like $2 and you're done. You never have to spend more because you already have what you wanted. You know?
And that's generally like, but like, see, and that's the thing, like gacha loot boxes, if you have issues with gambling or anything like that, that's when you end up on that whale thing.
Could be
whereas
a trigger.
Like, whereas like me for like Genshin, like, they'll give you a certain number of free spins. If I don't get the character, like a character that I particularly was like, oh, that dude's cool, I'm just like, whatever. I can play the game without that.
Man, I feel but stupid. I really thought gotcha.
But that's a me personal thing. That does not discount the predatory nature for another player. And that's one of those things that people need to...
They also have that concept with regular toy boxes too. So like, for example, I'm wearing a Ninja Turtle shirt. So it's like, okay, well, like you can get one of four Ninja Turtles in a box and you don't know which one you're going to get. So you can buy four boxes and you can get two Michelangelos and two Raphaels and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, they also have this crazy shit that they do in a lot of MMOs, mostly like Asian MMOs, Korean MMOs, is when you go and you want to upgrade your weapon and there's like a percent chance that you can upgrade your weapon with this currency you buy for real money. So you buy this currency and you spend it and it's like 40% chance to upgrade or even 1% chance to upgrade and you keep spending and spending until your weapon's upgraded and it's like, damn, dude.
I'm glad I just want to read this from chat. Multiple people have said, I actually thought gotcha meant the same thing as Carrick. So I don't feel as dumb.
You're not alone.
So I feel stupid when I said that because it sounds, I still am like, has nobody figured that out that that's a you should have named it something else anyway? Because I can't be the only one thinking that it's a weird
whereas skate, you know what's going to happen, like, you're going to be like, hey, do you want to buy this pair of Yeezys?
Right,
it's going to cost you $5.
Oh my god,
if you want this, you know, Vans shirt,
sorry, or this Brett Supreme. Says I was never brave enough to ask the question Carrick just asked. Wow. Here's the thing though, Mike, and by the way, Gene, when you were gone, we were talking about Skate switching its name and going free to play. That's where this conversation was
that's a tragedy.
Do you guys think, okay, this is gonna get a little deep in the woods, but I just want to ask something. So we saw with Death Stranding the Mountain Dew commercial, or what was he drinking? What was the
monster energy?
Monster.
So do you guys think it would be better? So would you guys be more okay if really cool stuff came out that might be monster identified? Like you got a monster shirt, but you like the design. And this is free, by the way. This is when you start playing the game, the free-to-play stuff was sponsored. And then the cosmetics that they're rolling out wasn't necessarily not sponsored, but it maybe was something that nobody would want to sponsor. Like, are you guys okay with that? Like having sponsored stuff be free or... So, like, if I open up my character and I start playing as an archer, I suddenly have a Monster Energy shirt on. But it looks cool.
I think yes, but the idea of that is a little scary for me.
It's scary, isn't it? Yeah. You know? I was just trying to figure out. You
know. Yeah.
I'd be fine with it, but the business case and the strength of Skate is definitely, and EA knows this, to go to Adidas.
It is. It absolutely is. It's a partnership. It's a partnership.
And say, with them. Look, we can put your shirt and your clothes in the game. Yeah. It'll cost $5 to $10 a pop, and you will get a cut of that too. So it's advertising, and you get money for it. EA is absolutely going to do that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
And people also love and Take those Two. Brands. You had mentioned.
Yeah, and that's why I was saying, if someone else maybe announced a free to play game, free to play skating game, maybe that could work. But EA, Take Two, I know what you guys are going to do.
Yeah,
like I know exactly what.
Yeah. In that space, they're considered bad actors. We got a Rusty Carl, $5 super chat. He said, "Happy Friday and stay great." How do you guys feel about Pearl Abyss's new direction with Crimson Desert and Doki 5? I don't know about any new art direction.
It's pronounced Dokibi. Dokibi.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was a number. Dokibi,
yeah. I thought it was Doke 5 too. So, but I've interviewed them. I don't know what's been going on, though. I haven't kept in touch with it. I play Black Desert Online, which is actually a pretty fun MMO.
It's a pretty fun MMO, yeah.
Yeah. It's
and
not bad.
To me personally, Crimson Desert looked awesome. So I don't know about this Switch. I'm assuming, I don't know what he says. How do you feel about the new direction?
I think they want to expand their player base. And with Dokivi, they're kind of going for that like young Pokemon like crowd or whatever.
Right.
And then so they're creating like a high quality open world like AAA kids game where like you battle other monsters with like fireworks and like confetti and stuff like that. You know, it looked kind of fun. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know if Crimson. I think Crimson Desert is probably their like AAA open world game. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's
single player, right?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be single player if I remember correctly. We're gonna see a lot more of that. We're already sort of seeing it in the Korean and Chinese wave, which is a bunch of developers who were previously working consulting for other studios or working under other studios finally getting their chance to go indie, like Genshin Impact. MiHoYo is one of those. Like they gained all of their stuff before they started doing their own games working for others, and then once they've moved, and you're starting to see that too, what's the Wukong
Black Monkey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
Yeah. And like those games.
Pearl Abyss was like that too. They were working for mobile games and they're like, you know what? I want to make my own game. I'm tired of making mobile games.
So. Right. And so they gained all their strength on mobile games. Then they've separated out to their own independent studios and they're starting to make big games. So you're going to probably see in like another couple years, like Genshin was the harbinger of that, but more of those games start to make their way over to the US slowly, and especially with Unreal Engine.
All these new Chinese trailers I've been seeing in Unreal have been fucking crazy, like just insane over the top combat. It looks fucking good,
dude. Here's the thing, man, because we're gonna have a developer on here in just a couple days from a AAA studio, and when I was asking him questions I was like, why are we hearing all that? And they don't use Unreal for the game he's working on, but he worked on Unreal on the side. And his statement was, anybody who touches Unreal for a period of time, that no matter how detailed and immaculate their internal engine is, which most actually aren't anymore, they will want to switch to Unreal. He was like the iteration time in Unreal is unreal. The ability to put something down and get a game looking good and working well is 1/10 the time.
And that's why the Unity thing went.
That's
so
yeah, the nudity.
For them.
Yeah, it went so poorly, and it's a huge boon to developers, guys. I played around with Unreal, and I was able to make a level that looked better than last generation's games in fucking like half a day. It wasn't a huge thing, but it had action and combat, and I was just like, oh my god. This is amazing.
But it's just a lot easier to hire for Unreal too, because like look at how much little time you spent and you were able to do that much. So like imagine people who actually like train day by day into this.
Yeah.
That pool of hiring is just going to be so much easier. So you can just expand your studio more, so you can just make bigger games, you know, as opposed to, you know, Halo Infinite, like they're working on their own wacky engine and like they can't have enough people over there. You know, like, I can't believe that they pull people away from fixing desync to make the co-op. And it's like, man, desync has been an issue since day one.
It's
absolutely insane that you guys can't fix a core issue of the multiplayer and like also update co-op at the same time. Like, they really can't have two balls up in the air at the same time.
Well, I mean, they couldn't even handle Master Chief Collection, which is a steaming pile of shit. Dakota Martin, $5 super chat. Hey, Carrick, love you guys. Been watching for years. I've seen you play Hunter Call of the Wild. Just wondering if you'll be trying out Way of the Hunter. I will. It's a good question. Also, if you're a fan of Call of the Wild, they've released about 15 new reserves. And we'll probably do a stream at some point for that. Beastie by Nature, $9 super chat. I've recently lost my uncle. That sucks. I'm sorry to hear that. Who got me into games. For a while, I've not wanted to play anything until I decided to play Ori today. What games got you back into playing after a difficult life period? Well, Gene's explained a little bit about Cyberpunk, so there's that. And did you do that prior to the podcast starting, Gene, or do you want to share that story? You were talking about playing Cyberpunk and how you feel about it now.
Yeah. I mean, I just played Cyberpunk. Well, I guess it's like getting me back into gaming. For that, I guess is like it was actually Metal Gear Solid 1, where I actually quit gaming for a while because like I was into drugs and like suicidal. I was in and out of mental institutions and rehab back in high school. And then when I went to college, I went to my buddy's house and he was playing Metal Gear Solid 1 on the PlayStation. And like there was all this dialogue and talking, and they're talking about politics and nuclear bombs and like Metal Gear. And I'm just like, oh my God, video games are like this now? Like, I can't believe I quit.
You're playing Atari Combat and shit last time you played.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the last game I played was like Resident Evil 2, where like, you know, it's like, hey, you take this key card, and it's like that's the last story presentation we got. So like Metal Gear Solid was like leagues ahead of anything else. So I was like, I'm getting back into video games and I'm going to play this Metal Gear Solid right away. And then like I just never stopped ever since. So
that's very cool. Mike, do you have any difficult times? And we don't have to if we don't have any.
I will say twice. One, I honestly have not had that many difficult times. And two, I've also never really stopped playing. Like I've been my first real like retail job in high school was at a video game store. So I've been playing like games just straight the entire time through. Like even while I got it, and that's why I ended up doing this, because I was already just always playing games. There was some piracy in there, but we'll keep
that. Being
a pirate is all right with me.
So yeah, I've never stopped. For me, like now it's a little bit lessened because I don't have to anymore. So I only play the ones that are like, oh, this strikes my fancy.
Right.
But for a while there, like I've just been on the treadmill and you know that, like if you're reviewing everything, it's just, it just keeps going.
And you might remember the stuff, but Mike, the one I've always prided myself on memory of games I've played, but lately I've been like, what, which one of the 80 Resident Evil games had this? That starts to creep up, where especially with series. What about you, Johnny? Any like bad times that games have gotten you through?
Well, I don't really have that, because for me games and playing guitar is what I do to process difficult stuff a lot of times, right? So very often if I'm processing something, I do that via those things. And so I've never had a case where something bad pulled me away from games. So, yeah.
Gotcha. What about you, Abzi?
Yeah, actually, I've never actually stopped playing games. But last year, I believe it was last year, my life was just going you know when everything just somehow, the stars align and everything's just going to shit?
It's haywire.
Yeah, yep. I was losing family members. I had family issues, my country, and you know, a lot of shit was just like fucking with me. So I lost myself in an MMO. It was Final Fantasy 14. And dude, so the first 30, yeah. You know, Mike, the first 30 hours of the game is unbelievably boring and bad. Like the first, and ARR is just fucking, it's a slug and a half. But, you know, losing myself in that world and you know, going on fishing trips and stuff, you know, doing all these things in the game helped me get over the ARR hump and then, you know, play the actual really good actual story and yeah. game. And yeah, losing myself in an MMO is the surefire way to have me disregard my real life. So
for me, I think I'm opposite where games probably wouldn't work. Martial arts works. Working out works. Mm-hmm. D&D works. D&D definitely works. Social, like getting some friends together and playing D&D or doing this podcast. Because it's not bullshit when I say that, like, I'll have a bad week or I had a migraine. And in fact, right before we went live, and the moment we start talking, it goes away. And so to me, the Friday podcast is like that. So if there's bad times, I come together with people I know and it usually goes away. But when I was young, I had a, like, I guess you would call it a disease, but I had some issues with bleeding and clots. And so I was in the hospital and they put me next to the oncology ward, the cancer ward. So it's just a really depressing time. It was like people were dying. Like, and so I got to know this one kid and he passed away while I was like laying next to him. And he had a game. He had a LCD game, those old style LEDs. And It was basically Snake, and you could play like 9 or 10 versions by hitting the menu button. And it was really just Snake with one ball that you need to catch, or Snake with two, or Snake with three. That's how old this was. And I remember his mom and dad came in, and they collected his things. And she walked over and she's like, "Do you want this little game that he had?" Which, you know, I was like, "Yeah." And I played it, and I remember like that definitely got me not to think about what I was going through. But that was the last time where. Like maybe because of that, I don't play games. I have a difficult time enjoying a game if I am having stressful times. So that could have caused that.
That's a great story.
It could have caused me to revert from it. But I do think it's incredibly, what would be the term? It's incredibly therapeutic if it works for you. I would say 99% of the people I know, it does work for them. They get into some world and they do their thing and they evaporate. You know, and they can, I read, and to me, it's reading. Reading is, I don't even know how to describe it. I get really tense in real life if I don't read. And then even like family members will be like, maybe you just need to sit down and read. They sort of know that's a thing. And I'll jump into a book. 2 hours later, your brain is like, you know how they say time heals all wounds. I absolutely don't believe that. Maybe I just hate everything, but I don't believe that. But you can get out of a book after 2 hours and the bad time happened a while ago. And your brain just sort of is like, okay, it's not as important. It's not, and then as you distance yourself from it, so books would be mine.
When you do it for work, a lot of times you want to do something else.
You know what? I've never had that.
Oh, really?
I've never once had that, and I'm worried I will get it. So I play more games prior to reviewing than I ever do reviewing. Because I had to force the game time.
I agree with that.
So I would come home and be like, I got to play a game because if I don't, I got to go to work tomorrow. The weekends, I'd be like, I'm going to game. And now as a reviewer, I can pick and choose. And I've definitely turned down Death Stranding, Cyberpunk, two of the biggest games of all time. I turned them both down. I was like, nah, I'm not going to have time. It's not going to work for me.
Yeah, like I'll still play games, but like sometimes, well, I play MMOs and some other stuff, so I still do like free time stuff. But if I'm not playing, sometimes I'll just jump to other stuff. I'll do anime, comics, hit the gym, you know, stuff like that, just to
touch grass.
I hit comics recently with the whole cancer diagnosis and the TMNT Shredder's Revenge. Obviously, I'm a huge Ninja Turtles fan. Got me kind of reading the IDW run.
The IDW run is fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I don't like comics, by the way. And Batman, or the New 52, I've been loving, and that IDW was like, those are the two. I don't know if somebody mentioned them to me or what, but it's a fantastic run.
It's fantastic stories. I read all issues 1 through 100, like in the cancer ward. It was, you know, like, it made time go by so fast. It was fantastic.
Anything, by the way, that can make your time go fast when you're in the award there is a positive. Yeah. Let me tell you, there's almost nothing more horrible than being stuck in there. But we do have some cool questions as well that I got from patrons I want to ask. We'll start with Mike and Gene. We'll go to everybody else. But here's the thing I want. We always talk about what's a cool game, blah, blah, blah. What I want to know from Mike and Gene, Mike can go first or Gene can go first. You guys can pass it off if you don't have an answer. What is the hardest experience or most difficult, stressful experience you have had so far in covering games? Has there been something that has just been, and it doesn't even have to be terrible. It's just the most stressful time that you've had or where something just wasn't hitting right when covering games.
I think I'll let Gene go first.
I think this is positive that we're not getting them jumping up saying I have 55 examples.
Yeah, I guess most recently, I think it actually was Cyberpunk, where like that was really like we got the game so late, you know, and so we had to really like rush through it, and then so I, you know, my initial review of Cyberpunk was pretty positive, and then I hit more and more bugs. And I was like, okay, well, like I feel like I misrepresented the game, and I was also not having fun, and I was also like rushing through the game, so like I wasn't having fun. The game was a mess. I felt like I was kind of like misrepresenting it to readers, which no one really got mad at me for. Thank goodness, but it still felt bad. It still wasn't like a fun time. Yeah. So again, like you know, like if I had to review AC Valhalla. That would have also been a terrible time. I would have hated myself for it, you know.
Yeah. So that was probably my hardest one. Would be GTA 5, the original time, because Rockstar gave it to us, and they did it with Red Dead Redemption 2 as well. They gave it to us like a week before embargo. Mm-hmm. So I did GTA 5 probably like 14-hour days. Of just playing straight, then going to sleep, then getting up, then playing, you know, just to meet that embargo. These days, I don't care as much about like where I am now. I don't have to care as much as embargoes.
Right.
So it'd be one of those things where I'd be like, a week, we probably can't hit that. So, you know, I'll probably do something, but I wouldn't hammer myself like that. Not anymore. That's probably the worst. And then maybe Killer is Dead. Another issue that you find in terms of reviewing is if you hate a game,
yeah,
you have to still keep playing it to review it. Like I'm old school like that. I will keep going until I'm done.
Man, then, I wish I liked Killer is Dead. Yeah, you're right about that.
And then you get to the end and you're like, man, I really, really hated this game. But do I really, really hate it because I hated it and I had to keep playing? Or because it was actually that bad? And trying to parse through that feeling for a review is difficult for me. Because a lot of people think of like game reviewing and stuff like, oh, you get to play all the new games early. One, yes, that's sometimes fun. But you also sometimes miss out on the conversation, which is part of the fun of it. But also, not every game that you get is going to be good. Carrick might have some leeway to be like, I don't want to just, I'm just not covering this. But back when I was doing US Gamer, like, even if it was bad, like, once I was on covering it, like, I was just covering it, regardless if it was good or bad. And when you hit a bad game, it's like pulling teeth.
I would agree. I think for me, if I don't like a game, I'm very good at teasing the hell out of it. So to me, it's sort of fun. But if it's boring, then sometimes you get into a weird position where you're like, there's almost no energy to get me ready for the review. But yeah, I wouldn't say I really have those kind of experience. The worst for me is actually hilarious for me, but it should be bad. But instead, I find it awesome. And that's when a certain PR person accepted my request for a review and then accidentally put my name on the forward and called me a bunch of names. It was like this fat piece of shit who wants our game, blah, blah, blah. And by the way, they were one of the top four publishers in video games. Oh. And they're fired. They're gone. I don't know if it's because of that, but
good.
They were like, it was so unprofessional. And I come from a place that's pretty unprofessional, loggers and shit. You know, they're going to say stuff that like nobody expects, but I got it. And I was like, oh my God. And I thought it was, I mean, it was bad in a way where I was like, this person couldn't even, they didn't even need to respond to me. Because we, I get that still. We're all email, no response. And
they
the
went out
up.
Of their way to
They went out of their way to be
names.
Like, this.
Yeah.
Don't give this person a code. They're just a piece of blah, 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 blah. And oh, I found out later it's because I didn't like a game they had professionally worked on. And I teased it. But it wasn't really bad. In a weird way, I'm like, wow, I got that person to be that energetic.
You thrive on that, Kirk.
I do,
right?
Admittedly.
You thrive on Twitter.
Yeah, like I'll do it on Twitter. I'll just honeypot people to see what people will say on Twitter. And I know you're not supposed to do that, but it is really fun. It is really, especially with certain people, if you say something and you're just waiting, you're like, okay, somebody's got to jump on this. And then you get that person who leaps and you're like, oh, here we go. It's going to be awesome. But yeah, I wouldn't say I've had a bad one. It's been great. It's been a really good experience. But I got lucky. I met Vermintide guys who are fantastic. I've got to talk to you guys who are fantastic. I've got to talk, like almost everybody I've dealt with has luckily been awesome. And I got lucky because I know that's not always the way it goes. I've talked to Dreamcast guy and a couple other people behind the scenes about particular things, and I hear their stories, right. And I'm like, you can sort of tell that might have colored them a little bit. It might have tinted their idea of gaming. I came into it, and my first interview, I always say this, was with Fat Shark, and we laughed for a solid 2 hours. Like, it was ridiculous previewing Vermintide and sitting with them, and they were like, we've never had an interview like this. Like, who are you? And I'm like, let's just find out. We did the dumbest stuff. And you get those good reactions. Scott Jelinek, $5 super chat. Lots of drama over RDR2 Online being dead. People complaining Rockstar needs to add content. The game already has 200 hours. Are gamers too entitled? No. No, they didn't support it as much as people wanted.
Red Dead Online was sold at least as a online service that would continue. And there's an expectation that that would actually happen. It's like if Skate 2 comes out and they support it for 2 years and then walk away, you can be angry that it doesn't, like, that's not entitlement. It'd be one thing if you're just talking about RDR2, the base game, but they sold the online thing and they still support GTA.
Yeah,
they sell it separately.
And it had microtransactions in RDO too. So it's like,
dude, you had to pay to get fishing. Not pay, but you had to grind like a mother in RDR2 to get fishing when it first came out.
Yeah. So it's kind of even worse than Halo Infinite in that regard, because at least Halo Infinite is free and it's not being supported very well.
The multiplayer for Halo Infinite? Yeah.
Yeah. But at least it's free. But it would be kind of like if you bought Halo Infinite and then they just stopped supporting it. And it's like, you sold it as like a service. You sold this as like a continuing living world. And then you just didn't do anything with it. Like, I was really looking forward to Red Dead Online. So it is, I do think it's pretty disappointing. You know, I'm not going to cry over it, but I moved on from it. But
moment of silence for the people who bought Anthem as well, you know.
Oh yeah, Anthem too. Anthem was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, and not only that, guys, with Anthem, I always get this almost nostalgic feeling for games, even if they're bad, that die. There's something about me that's like, I wish it might be games preservation in my mind. I'm not as big on that as everybody else, but there's something about it when I find out a game, they're turning the servers off, and this game's not gonna have multiplayer, which is Ubisoft just announced all those games where, like, you know, bits and pieces of them would be turned off. I get that nostalgic feeling, but I'm not going to cry about it, like Gene said. Like, it's just that it's unfortunate. I did want to ask you guys, we got another question here, which was, what is your biggest fanboy or fangirl moment from Gene and Mike? So what was your biggest, I met this, like, game designer, or I got to play this game early?
I met Hideo Kojima.
Oh, awesome.
I got to interview him. I got to ask him about Metal Gear Solid 2 and the internet and meme culture. And like misinformation, these were questions that I've been wanting to ask him since 2001. Mm-hmm. And I was able to ask him 18 years later in 2019 in New York City when he was on tour for Death Stranding. And I never get nervous for any interview. You know, like, I've interviewed like George W. Bush, you know, I've interviewed Bill Clinton.
Wow.
You know?
What? Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, he actually. Yeah, Washington Post. It's not. They're not interviewing Carrick. They're interviewing people who matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Continue, Gene. Sorry.
Yeah, like I've spoken to Hillary Clinton, you know, like that's none of those awesome. People ever in none of those people ever intimidated me. But then when I heard that Hideo Kojima was walking down the hall, my palms were sweaty mom's spaghetti, you know, like it was crazy.
Yeah.
Like I was just I was like telling my video producer, do I look okay? Like how do I look? You look fine.
Like a date, it's right? Like, you're like got an yeah. iron shirt and shit. That's awesome.
It was absolutely crazy. So then I, you know, and then like the article is pinned on my Twitter. So if you guys want to check it out, you know, I'm super proud of the article. Kojima later followed up with me and he said, like, you know, like you were really one of the only interviewers who ever got me. So like to hear that is just like a dream come true. And before that, the other fanboy moment was seeing the trailer for Metal Gear Solid 3 at E3. And I was like, oh my God, this is the new trailer. I feel so close to the creator. And like, little did I know that 16 years later, I would actually get to meet him and chat with him and talk with him. And now we just like exchange messages every once in a while.
Dude, that's amazing. Crazy.
Yeah?
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's so good. What about you, Mike?
So most of the ones since I started doing this professionally, like I've also met Kojima. And I sort of stow, like I can mentally, once I hit that that barrier and I start talking to the person, like it just goes away. Like it's just you and me, we're doing the interview. So my biggest one was probably back in the day before I was doing this professionally, I worked for a game store and you could go to E3 if you worked in games retail. So my first E3 was pre-professional. That was Atlanta for the N64. And I went, like I was still in high school and I went to E3, which was just like a huge moment. That was, they were showing the N64 for the US at that time. That's how old this was.
That's huge.
And, yeah. And I was losing my mind, just period. We're outside because the dude I'm with was slightly older, like because we just rolled into a Jeep and drove up there, and he had to go out for a smoke. And Miyamoto was there, just outside the convention center, just like standing. And we fanboyed out. I fanboyed out on Miyamoto right there. Shook his hand, was like, yeah, got a picture. That was my biggest fanboy moment before. Like professionally, I'm just like I'll get in, we'll do the interview, we'll talk at the end. I'll be like, thanks. Maybe drop a little like Hideki Kamiya. I'll be like, yo, I really like this thing that you did. Or like talking with Naoki Yoshida. Being like, yo, is that the Garo ring that you're wearing there, dude? And then maybe we'll jaw jack. But generally, the fanboy moment, once I start doing this professionally, it's like at the end, briefly. Because, you know, they got shit to do. They're people, and we're trying to get shit done. And usually it's at a PAX or an E3, so we got to go anyways. but Miyamoto, I 100% fanboyed out on
Miyamoto is huge. I've only interviewed him via email, so if I ever meet him in person, like that would probably be another one, you know, where I'd be like, oh my god, you know, I'm meeting God right here, you know, that's crazy.
I got lucky because I got to interview Brian Fargo, and spectacular guy. We got to sit down with him, but the other one was Jordan Wiseman, and we didn't have any place to go at GDC. There was nowhere to go. And we just sat on the floor in the middle of a hallway, and he sat 2 hours talking about BattleTech, all the old stuff, all the trademark shit he's had to fight through, working for various companies, making Shadowrun, all that kind of stuff, and just sitting with him for hours. And he was the coolest dude I've ever met.
I did them for when he was not Shadowrun, it was for BattleTech. And I wanted to go over through his whole career, and we were at PAX West, and he was just like,
it might have been the same year I talked to him then.
Probably. So like a lot of the stuff when we do interviews, usually there's a PR person
right
there, and they'll cut off the interview. But I he owns the company.
Yeah.
So he was just like, are we good to his PR person? And then he was like, let's just go find a little place at the convention center.
Okay, that must have been the same year. Yeah, must
yeah. be the same year. And we can just talk. And we just walked over to like a bit of the Seattle Convention Center, and he interviewed for like a good 2 hours because I wanted to ask him about his entire career. So
yeah, dude, he's one of the greatest guys. He sat down and he was surprised because I was a big BattleTech fan, so I was naming like robots and shit. And he was like, "Oh my god, you do know." Then we sat and it was him as a fan of like what he's worked on. And that was also cool because it wasn't, Jordan has a refreshingly excited way of talking about stuff that a lot of people who've created it don't have anymore. And they've created it and they moved on. But he was very much excited about old stuff he had done. Just excited, just like he loved it. You can tell. And sometimes you'll get a person where you can tell their old stuff is like, yeah, they know they did it. And that's great, and I can refresh and talk to you about the same, you know, blurbs that I always give. And you get that one lucky person who does that. Yeah, it's very cool. And then we have another question here.
One sec. Yeah, I need to say mine you guys as have well.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go on, Abzi, you first.
Me first? Oh, okay. It's there's this artist who's a part of Mousetrap. Mousetrap is like the record label owned by Deadmau5. And there was an artist named, his name is Atlas. I don't know if he's still there, but I loved his music. And he was coming to play here in London, Ontario. And I was part of a promotion company that would deal with like getting those people and kind of like talking to them and stuff like that. So we were on stage while his opener was playing. I think I said something like, "Oh, I like this certain moment from your mix." And he was like, "Wait, that's my favorite moment too. Like I added this because blah, blah, blah." And he was like, "Okay, let's go backstage and talk a little bit." And then we went backstage and just talked about music production. And he's like, "Yo, I'll add you." And back in the day when people actually used Facebook, he's like,
Facebook.
"Add you on Facebook." And we shared stuff. And it was like, I was just fangirling inside. I was like, "Oh my God."
That's yeah. very cool. What about you, Johnny?
Well, I got to meet Hugh Jackman here
Wait,
in London.
What? That just blew my story.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hurry, go for it.
Dude, so it was crazy, man. So this one day, me and some friends went to be part of an audience to one of these like TV programs where, you know, you have an audience and there's like people being interviewed. And one of the guests was Hugh Jackman. And at the end, after the show, we kind of had the chance to walk up to him and like shake his hand and stuff. And first of all, I'm taller than him, so take that, Hugh Jackman. But I told him, right, I geeked out, "Dude, I love you in Wolverine," right? And he did the thing, you know, the there in person. That was awesome. He's an awesome dude. You know, he took the time to actually, you know, say hi to whoever wanted to approach him, like shake your hand, you know, like really down to earth. And yeah, that was an awesome moment.
That's very cool. The last question that these guys have, they just say currently, but they wanted to ask Gene and Mike, what are your favorite IP? I think we might know these answers now through all this discussion, but what's your favorite IP, comic, movie, music, etc.? So like what's, you can pick any of those categories. Like, is there something you're in love with particularly right now? It sounds like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles might be Gene's.
Oh, totally Ninja Turtles. Yeah, I'm wearing the shirt. I got the comics in the back. I got the $200 limited run game version, which is a total ripoff. I do not recommend buying it, but I bought it anyways because I'm just a total Ninja Turtle shill. And you know, you see the Street Fighter 2 arcade cabinet in back. I kind of want the Turtles in Time version. You know, it's just the Ninja Turtles were like the Beatles of like 80s pop toy culture. You
yeah.
know? So.
Yeah, definitely. What is yours, Mike? I'll be right back. I'm going to let my dogs in.
Single one. Shit. Damn. I don't know if I have a single one. Superman, Spider-Man. Gundam and Kamen Rider. Those are my like across the board big ones. huge Superman fan, huge fan of all facets Spider-Man, like even all the extra Spider-Man's Miles, Ben Reilly, stuff like that. Kamen Rider has been a long time. I lived in Japan for a while, so I've carried Kamen Rider and Super Sentai Love since then. And then Gundam, I came to later, like in the Gundam Wing era. But like on the fake bookshelves I have in the background here, my PC is just looking into my kitchen, so I put fake bookshelves up here. Like, you know, you can see the omnibuses of, like, you know, Batman, Superman. I got some.
Is this your own bookshelf where you just took a picture of it?
And this is actually just one of the bookshelves. I have a second one in there that I didn't have a picture of, but I was just like, okay, I'll take this and put this up. So,
beautiful collection. I'm jealous. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, it's never just one thing. You gotta love a whole bunch of stuff, but but those are probably like my big four. Like I'll turn out for any of this. So
you definitely want to be a multifaceted person, you know, like I'm just not like a Ninja Turtles guy for sure, you know.
Even your bedspreads Ninja Turtles. That's all.
Are Power Rangers considered pop culture now? Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Battle for the Grid is an awesome game too. Play that. Yeah.
Hasbro is not going to spend a ton of money to buy something that's not pop culture. Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. What else we got, Johnny, for topics?
So we did our topics. We have questions there. Do you want me to read those? The ones we had. Okay. So hard disk. Oh, wait. So we've already asked a couple of those. Well, we do have this one. Maybe the guys here can weigh in. How do you feel about games to shows and movies?
I watch every single one of them. I've watched every single video game adaptation ever made, at least to a movie. I love them, even though they're terrible. I think Assassin's Creed was the worst one ever made.
That's Michael Fassbender, right?
Yeah, Michael Fassbender,
who's obviously so
great talent, but it's such
bad,
a bad movie, you know? Wow. It's such a terrible movie. It made me like want to vomit. Like it made me physically ill. It's that bad. But I also did an article, like the Oscars of video game movies, where I basically like give awards to like best actor, like best actress, best soundtrack or whatever to like video game movies. Because I love live adaptations, even though they're terrible, you know. So definitely take my Resident Evil Netflix recommendation with a grain of salt, because like the bar for video game adaptations is so low, because like I've watched them all. And like I'll take anything. Like it's just like absolute brain junk candy for me. I will say one thing, you know, with Halo and this Resident Evil and also like the Cowboy Bebop adaptation that Netflix did, I'm honestly getting a little tired of like these shows trying to be different and like trying to do their own thing or whatever like that. It's like, can you just like fucking like adapt the fucking thing and like just like do it straightforward? Like can
stick anybody to the material, my dude?
Like, yeah, just fucking tell the Halo story for fuck's sake, you know? Like, so like I'm like I get that you want to like sometimes it's got to be different, right? Like Cyberpunk Edgerunners is doing it like a really unique way. Castlevania Netflix obviously was like absolutely fantastic, but I'm still inspired by it. But like, I don't know, like if you really can't do it, then just don't do it, you know? And sometimes like you're trying too hard. Halo didn't need to be like this like philosophical thing. Like we just really wanted to see soldiers shoot aliens. That's it.
True. I think it's like a thin line. Like I super agree with what Mike's point earlier, where dude, just don't tell the same story, you know, just have it in the same universe, maybe some similar characters, but tell a different story that we didn't see in the game, but also
Yeah, but also
be true to the subject matter. I think there is a thin line, but just telling the same story, it's like, okay, we've already played the game and they do it. The game, there's a reason for it being a game, right? So
yeah,
telling different stories is great. And yeah, I think Castlevania would be like my favorite one by far.
I think it's like they're trying to like subvert expectations. They're trying to like, everyone's trying to be the Last Jedi, and like everyone hated the Last Jedi. So like, why is everyone like trying to like follow the Last Jedi's example? And it's like, oh, we should totally do that and like subvert expectations and have Master Chief have sex. Like, what the fuck, you know? I'm just so tired of that shit. Like, what the, like, I don't understand, you know? And that Cowboy Bebop, like, what if this character was this completely different way? And like, you know, Resident Evil, it was like nothing like the games. And it's like, I don't know. I'm just getting a little exhausted by it. And it only adds more discourse, and discourse is only like more exhausting. So like, I just want the discourse to stop. And like,
yeah, it's like they're trying to appeal to the gamers, and then they're trying to also bring these new people that aren't familiar with the games. So they try to water down things or change things around.
Well, I have a question for that then, Abzi. Do you think like, somebody who didn't play the games of Halo were really hoping to see Master Chief's dick?
Because I don't think so.
I think that is typically, and we've seen it, especially if you're older, you see it about once every 10 years. And I talk about this with like The Crow, where heroes are anti-heroes. We got to be anti-heroes. Everything's got to be your anti-guy. And then after a while, they went back towards like Expendables and stuff where they're good guys at this point. And then now we're back to the point where it's like, let's be edgy. And it's like, dude, put the mascara down. You don't need eyeliner. You're 40. Make a fucking normal show about Halo. And the thing about Halo that bothers me is, I'm just going to be brutally honest here. I like a lot of the people at Microsoft, and I have I consider it one of the best relationships. But if they were to ever say, how have we handled Master Chief in the last 15 years? I would say you've handled it worse than any other major IP of any other studio and or platform maker ever. Master Chief Collection didn't fucking allow you to actually play the game in co-op. They couldn't even get the games to load. It was a piece of shit when it came out. It was a piece of shit. And I don't care if developers watching. I don't give a fuck. You made a bad... That was bad. Technically bad. It's taken you years to even get it working. They did the same thing with all this other stuff. And they gave it to a guy who then basically admits, we didn't even talk about Halo. We're trying to do something different. And you're all, what are you guys doing? You're not building on the fan base so that the fan base tells others who are not in the fan base it's good. That's how you. That's the normal trajectory that you always get. Instead, you've made fans enemies of that show. Like, that makes no one in any other, no one ever in any other entertainment spectrum says, let's do this.
That's such a good perspective that you just said, where it's like nobody who was uninterested in Halo before was like, you know what? I'm interested in seeing this new character's dick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's never happened.
It's never happened. That's not a question that exists. Like, nobody's wondering that.
Nobody. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
So I have three thoughts. One, and I talked about this earlier with Resident Evil. Sometimes there are things that are fine on their own, but bad in the context of connection. Cowboy Bebop is one of those. I think Cowboy Bebop, what they had could have been something if it wasn't attached to Cowboy Bebop. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like the show would have been a fine, fun sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
But Cowboy Bebop is amazing.
Yeah.
And the show was not.
I would not have minded Vicious's portrayal if Vicious previously didn't exist. And I'm just looking at this guy, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing with this guy? You know?
Right.
And, oh, go ahead, Mike.
And that comes in different directions. Like yes, you can stick to the source material, but then you got stuff like Arrow is not Green Arrow. It never was. It was a completely different thing that sort of started. And even a lot of the MCU or DC universe, those aren't the same characters. Like Scarlet Witch has become the comic Scarlet Witch, but that was still a range of like
15
probably
years.
Probably a decade.
A decade. Not 15 years. Decade,
Where she wasn't actually the comic Scarlet Witch. She just had the name and they were doing similar things. So I'm generally fine with that. But the vibe is what they need to capture. And the thing with the Halo show is that what people want are people in powered suits doing cool shit. That's all you really needed for the Halo.
We got 20 minutes of it total. You know, we got 20 minutes of it total in the whole show.
And that's why, by the way, I will continually give kudos to a company that a lot of people hate, and that's Take Two, Tales, the guys who did The Walking Dead. Tales games, the stories of the Walking Dead or whatever, with the little girl and those characters. Because Clementine, I actually feel that they nailed the switchover incredibly well. Like, especially that first series was just Wolf Among Us.
Yeah.
The Wolf Among Us was amazing. And when you read the comics, it's additive. It's additive. Mm-hmm. It's not subtractive. And if a character's slightly different, you can see the stretch and go A to B. We haven't talked about, but I get why B was A at one point. And
the vibe is so key. Mike really hit it on the head. Yeah. Like, if you nail that feeling and that vibe, like, I don't think a lot of people are going to complain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, like, the X-Men movies weren't really X-Men. Blade wasn't actually Blade. And in fact,
was not Blade
bled
at all,
black
really, yeah.
into yeah. what Blade became in the comics. But the vibe is what you got to. And you have to ask yourself, what's the vibe that people are looking for from the game, the thing that they enjoy? And how can I bring that over? And like Resident Evil, for the parts that I saw, like Gene's like, oh, the Wesker stuff is interesting because Wesker in the show is like a scientist. He's doing Umbrella Corp shit. Mm-hmm. Whereas the teen side, it could have been, it might be fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's not the vibe, that the you're vibe looking for from Resident Evil.
Yeah, it became interesting once Wesker got involved and he was bringing the Resident Evil vibe into the teen drama stuff, you know, like literally, if you watch the show, like, yeah, it's crazy. It's got to be the vibe.
That's the thing. I feel like with the vibe itself, a lot of these adaptations, it's not focused enough or just don't know what to do with it, where they're just trying to like just spread their seed all over, like The Witcher, you know what I mean? You got Geralt from the game and then you got like,
characters from the books and stuff from,
and then, and then they're trying to make it into like this weird like timey whimey shit where they want to confuse people, and it's like,
do you know why that worked though, Abzi? They did hire the one actor who knows what the fuck he's
who
talking
knows
about.
Yeah, because he portrayed Geralt like game Geralt
the
very
director
well.
Asked him questions. Even the director has admitted that there are times where they sit down with him and he's like, this won't fly, this is not like where this should go, because it's going to go off the rails if we continue this way. He actually knows what he's talking about.
Yes,
and luckily
dude, that's
enough
why he was
is
like,
nice.
Yeah, he was like the only character I liked out of that
in The Witcher
that actually portrayed the characters I know and love.
And my last thought was the subvert the expectations. I think that's going to probably also fall away a little bit because probably the biggest movie of the summer is Top Gun Maverick,
right?
Which is a brick standard story, like
just the opposite of
there
that,
are
right?
no twists
right
in Top Gun Maverick whatsoever. As you're watching it, you're like, all right, I know
the twist is that there is no twist.
The right. twist is Tom Cruise didn't die in an airplane while filming it. Like every time he shows up in a movie, I'm quite literally, no lie, whenever he talks about the next movie he's doing, I'm like, I'm waiting for the morning brief to say Tom Cruise dies in the most spectacular airplane, car, hydrophone, right. underwater, submarine crash ever. And I'm like, that's the way to go out, man. If you're going to go out being like, I'm going to one-up myself every single time. And what happens is I think people, I'm not going to say everybody, but I think sometimes these directors don't have a lot of talent to do that, but they want to do it. They're like, I want to subvert it. And it's like, there's some people who are really good at that. You'll see some people who are just like, oh, wow. I mean, admittedly, a lot of people don't like, what's not Tarantino Pizza. What the fuck's his name? The director, Tarantino?
Nolan? Christopher?
No, Tarantino.
What's the pizza?
Yeah, the pizza's Tarantino's over here. There's like a 99-cent pizza, and I always get them names mixed up. But that dude, for a long time, was able to subvert as well as also pay homage to whatever he's got. Like, he was very good at that. At points, you're like, wow, he's... And I don't even like most of his movies, but I'm like, dude, I can tell why somebody likes that. Where if you say the Halo show, if one of you guys came on here and said, I love the Halo show, I'd be like, we need to fight. Because there's no chance that you like it. It doesn't make any sense. But I think Mike's
enjoyed it until the end. And then I was like, you know what? I actually kind of hate the show.
I think Mike's right, though, that hopefully this starts to go a little bit away. And people who know they can do that will do it. And people who... the companies will say, oh, we want the fans on our side, because gaming is one of the few places where they actively will go after their own fan base. And that's what they did with Halo. Yes. They're like, oh, we know 80 billion gillion people love Halo. If they do a Gears of War, I swear to God, it's going to be a teen
romance.
It's
like a big fuck you. Like, it's
And instead, why not make it like what it is. I mean, we already know mm-hmm. that Gears of War yeah. guys have gone through thousands of battles. Let's do it, man. Let's make a mm-hmm. Gears of War where every day you're like, holy shit. In fact, what blows me away is this goes out of games for a second. Orville is a better Star Trek than almost any Star Trek has ever been.
Yeah. Ooh, Strange New Worlds.
Strange New Worlds is I sort of like Strange New Worlds. I don't like Dimensions. But his idea, it's a brilliant idea. He's like, let's go in, sell it as a comedy, get people to buy off on it, and then over time, we're going to subtly alter it to be more and more
mm-hmm. like serious.
Until this last season, you're like, holy shit. This is the space scene in the first episode of Orville is better than almost any movie I have ever seen. Like, I've watched that first episode 10 times going like, how did they pay for this? It's ridiculous. The amount of, and they're one of the few that's been able to do that and sort of skew things and say, we're going to put more comedy, but we're not going to do it to where it's dumb. We're just going to do it sort of like if all of us were on a spaceship, like we'd say some stupid shit. We would, mm-hmm. we'd do some stupid stuff. And yet at the same time, still be backed up by story. And mm-hmm. admittedly, I've gained a ton of respect for, what's his name?
Seth MacFarlane.
Seth. It's almost because it
humanizes them and it makes those stories more impactful because yeah. it's so relatable.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of mileage to be done in doing the thing, but taking off the serial numbers, as I like to call it. Mm-hmm. Like Zack Snyder, yeah. who is
can a visionary
be a good director.
Can but, be.
But, I'm kidding, but yeah.
No, I mean, I think Zack Snyder...
I like him a lot. I like
has
him a lot.
A very good visual style. His storytelling is a little bit, mm-hmm, and his mm-hmm. films are uneven. But mm-hmm. he has Rebel Moon coming up, which is literally a pitch that he pitched to Lucasfilm for Star Wars, which is just Seven Samurai, and then the Solo Star Wars story shit happened, and they just moved away from all of that. And so he's just, Netflix was like, hey, we'll give you the money to do that pitch. So Rebel Moon is just his Star Wars on its own. It might not be good, but I like to see the idea. And one of the benefits that he gets to do is you don't have to fucking worry about canon. You don't have to worry about
right.
fandom or whatever. Like, everyone can look at it and go, oh, that's definitely just fucking Star Wars, dude. But it's his, so he can do whatever the fuck he wants with it.
One of the best. And and
two good examples of like getting the vibe right and reinventing the characters are the two big two Marvel and DC characters, Spider-Man and Batman.
Yeah.
Spider-Man was reinvented with Ultimate Spider-Man, which like predates like all the reboot things back in the 90s. And then Batman Begins, you know, what Christopher Nolan did, you know, he captured the vibe of a Batman movie in like a big Hollywood thing. And people are like, yeah, this rules, and started the whole wave of like grounded versions of like characters in films, yeah. you know, yeah, it's gritty, grounded versions of it, you know.
It's interesting to me because one of the best sci-fi shows in the world was basically going to be Star Trek, and that was Babylon 5. And they basically stole Deep Space Nine from him. And that didn't work out. And he made Babylon 5. And you can see the excellence of somebody who probably was going to go towards IP, which is Star Trek stuff. But because he couldn't and because it didn't work out, did his own thing, which became one of the best shows that I've probably ever seen on TV. And it's I do like these guys getting flexibility. But sometimes it feels like when these new guys come in, they maybe have one or two movies before they get in the Hollywood grind. Where it's like you mm-hmm. get one or two freedoms and then you get into the grind. Some people are really good at staying out of the grind. Like, what's his name with? He always does creatures with multiple eyes. The guy who did Hellboy,
the first.
He pretty much can get away with whatever weirdness. And it really depends on how much weirdness he has if you like it or not. But it seems like a lot of people get in the grind of Hollywood after a while. They get in the grind. And I think we see it with the developers. I really didn't think Death Stranding would be good. And I tease it all the time because I didn't enjoy it, but I'm obviously it's good. Like, I can look at it and go, that's good. And I worried about him having no control nobody to control him. But you can see that it's like him stepping away and doing his own thing. You're like, damn, you know, it worked.
Sometimes y'all need that, that control. You need that. Like I said,
you need
Snyder is uneven and
George Lucas is dead. people yeah. always say George Lucas, his stuff sort of went astray when his wife stopped and there were multiple people who were editing his stuff and looking through it. And once that all sort of went, and well, look at Harrison Ford when he was married originally, stodgy. Now he's got an earring and flies planes. Sometimes you got to step away. Just depends. When you guys look at games, do we have other questions? Because I want to go with some philosophical stuff for these guys.
Ooh, maybe we can hit one more of those Patreon
Gene,
questions.
Gene, are you okay? You still?
Yeah, I probably have to log off pretty soon. I'm getting my energy levels.
That's what I was.
You know what, Carrick? We hit the main ones from what we said already. So if you want to move on to, the philosophical.
Okay,
stuff.
So we okay. Let me see if I can. I want to make sure I remove anybody I'm talking bad about.
It should be fun.
Okay, we'll start we'll start with a small question, and then we'll get to the bigger one. Have you guys ever, when reviewing games, or you could also say reviewing, doing politics for Gene and games, and all this other stuff that you've done, Mike, it's mostly going to be about games. But have you guys ever felt that you have been personally thumbprinted due to your reaction of a game, a movie, or an interview?
Oh, 100%.
Could you explain within whatever means you need to explain it, how you felt that came back to you negatively?
I remember last year I spoke about how, you know, Ghost of Tsushima's portrayal of Japanese cinema really wasn't that accurate to actual Japanese like samurai film. And then as part of that discussion, I also talked about how, you know, mainland Japanese folks might find it a little more interesting than like Japanese Americans, right? Because Japanese Americans are worried about portrayal here because they're just not the majority. Whereas like in Japan, they're like, oh, check out this cool game. It's about us and it's about samurai. That's awesome and it plays well. So of course they're gonna love it, right? And they're not going to have a big cow about it. And then that turned into like me, like labeling me as like some kind of SJW. And I was like talking about like how Ghost of Tsushima is what's the word? Oh my God, my brain farted. Cultural appropriation, right? Cultural appropriation. And I was not saying that at all. Some other people were saying that. And I actually disagree with that. And I'll tell you why I disagree, because I believe that the samurai is global iconography. Like you cannot simply like just like the samurai is being adapted everywhere by every culture, you know. Like you can't just like claim the samurai anymore, you know. Like the Ninja Turtles, like the last Ninja Turtles book is called The Last Ronin. Are people going to accuse the Ninja Turtles of appropriation? I don't know. Like how far does that go? So I was not even talking about like anything about cultural appropriation in Ghost of Tsushima, but I was talking about the culture nuances and how I thought that it just didn't live up to samurai film. And then that suddenly turned me into an SJW. Oh, he's doing that. Fortunately, a lot of people kind of saw my argument and they're like, actually, he didn't say any of that. And I actually kind of see what he's saying. So that turned out pretty nicely, but I still see that linger right now where it's like, aren't you the guy who said Ghost of Tsushima was cultural appropriation? And it's like, it's exhausting because it's such a nuanced topic to talk about. And I just don't want to fucking talk about it.
Right.
So yeah, I think the biggest problem is so many people right now just do not read the actual articles. They read the titles and that's it. And they pass it to friends. And then, you know, it's like whispering someone into someone's ear and then he whispers it to
someone's
ear.
Telephone.
Yeah, exactly.
And also people just make up their own arguments in their head. Like they read one thing and they're like, oh, he's saying this, even though I'm not saying that at all. You know, like they're just like they just can't fucking read it. You know,
I had one of those. I went on a rant recently because there was one. Yeah. It was about the Steam Deck. Guy over at GameSpot wrote about the Steam Deck and he was like, the Steam Deck makes Nintendo Directs less exciting for me. And everyone was like, oh, are you saying the Steam Deck is going to kill the Switch? It's like, no, he was just saying that a lot of what he gets out of Nintendo Directs are indie games and he can just play them on the Steam Deck now.
Yeah.
And that was a very
valid point.
It was a very personal argument and a valid point. And everyone, like, I don't even know the dude. Like, I'd never heard of the dude who wrote it until then. I was just like, are y'all seriously like, like, yes, you can be like, yeah, but I mean, the Steam Deck is not a Switch killer. That's they're two completely different machines.
Yeah.
But this guy had a very personal argument and no one actually read the article.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I read the article and I was like, the only problem I have is the actual tweet itself where it changed the headline of the article to make it more generalized and like represent GameSpot's view. But like when I actually read the article, I was like, this article is totally fine. Like I totally see that. That's fine.
Yeah. Like a huge problem I have is like, a lot of people go like, well, we can't, you know, there's no good information out there, the media, and it's all like outrage and stuff. It's like, dude, I swear to God, if you actually read the articles, there is good information that you can, you know yes. what I mean? There is, it's out there. You just have to kind of click and just, you know, that extra step. And it doesn't take more than like 5 to 10
but
minutes.
But to their point, the tweet was misrepresenting the article so that there is still garbage in the media. Like I will always say that. That there's fucking trash in the media, and I'm part of the mainstream media, you know, and like we engage in that same bullshit too, clickbait shit, you know. So like I'm tired of it too, but you also have to read the article so you can kind of like calm down a bit.
I talked to Andy. First of all, Gene, do you need to go? So as we continue, are you okay for a little bit, or what do you want to do?
Maybe I guess I just tired myself out by cussing so much. Kidding.
Maybe
that fire is a good way to go out. So
okay, you
know, better to burn out than to fade away, right?
So. We're gonna stay on and talk. Mike, are you still okay
for good.
A couple minutes? Yeah, okay, good. I want to say, Gene, dude, one of the best people I've met. You're it, honestly, man. Like I've followed you for a long time. I don't even remember how we started talking on Twitter.
I just followed you. I just followed you, and I was like, dude, I love ACG. Like, I love his reviews. Like, I'm not gonna play a game or buy a game until I watch like what he's gonna say. And if he doesn't review it, then like I'm shit out of luck. So,
but I just want to say, man, it's been an absolute pleasure. And every Friday, as I tell Mike and the people that I want on here, every Friday is open to you at any time.
I want to be here because I got good energy right now and I need some good energy back, and I got it from all you guys. So.
Yeah.
Hey, man, dude, it was awesome. An absolute pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure, man.
I miss you, baby Gene.
I miss you too, Mike.
Because we're not that far away.
We're neighbors. We're neighbors. As soon COVID as I'm healthy again.
Then, yeah.
As soon as I'm healthy again, we're going to grab lunch again and coffee and beer or something like that, for sure, man.
All right. So everybody watching, make sure to follow Gene and read his article that he's got pinned with Kojima, right? You said that was the one that's pinned?
Yep.
I'm following Gene Hart
on Twitter.
Yep.
And thank you, chat, for supporting ACG. Keep the super chats coming, and I'll talk to you guys online.
See you, Gene. Have a good one, man.
Take care, man.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
What I was going to say was, make sure you follow Gene and everything. He's fucking so awesome. So moving on to the conversation of this, I wanted to say that, so you guys were talking about, oh man, I don't want to lose this. What was that last question?
We were talking about, the article
responses to stuff, right?
Yeah, things that carried forward, like that put a stamp on you and carried forward.
Yeah, so I talk with Andy Lanique all the time, and he PR does chef. He's come on multiple times. I can't believe how lucky I've been that every one of my first contacts was awesome. Like it's ridiculous how lucky I feel. One day I posted on Twitter the bar graph for views. And what I had done was I had done a video and I saw it was stagnant. It was flat, right? So I changed the thumbnail to grabby clickbait thumbnail. And the views, it was unbelievable. And what I did was I basically copied how other YouTubers usually do their reviews by putting like the answer in there and trying to make it sound like, is it the worst thing ever? You know, that kind of stuff. I saw this massive influx. It was beyond belief how quick that caught on and people started clicking on it, and it had already gone past my subscribers, so it wasn't them. It was like the algorithm had grabbed it. And it's interesting to me that we consistently see it, we all consistently know, and everybody consistently bitches about it, but it's such a small group that bitch and such a small group that know. And one of the things I always try to tell people is like, when you come to ACG and you're like, you're a patron of mine and you're bitching about microtransactions and I'm bitching back to you about them, we don't get out either. It doesn't get past us. No matter how I name something, it like ends up in the same group, in the same trash bin. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but we're all in the same trash bin, and our complaints and our things that we consider important are right here. But the mainstream stage of gamers don't give a shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was a post on the Final Fantasy XIV Reddit, and it was about partially that Asmund and others, the streamer.
I remember. I know the post you're talking about.
And it was like a whole bunch of a news thing happens, and then you get a bunch of videos and all streamer
face reaction, streamer face surprise.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh, and everyone was like, "Oh man, I fucking hate this." And then someone was like, one of the posts in there was like, "Well, actually, one of the guys explained that like the difference between not doing that and doing that in terms of actual views is huge.
Massive.
And when that's your livelihood, you're going to do that."
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is just because, like, as you said, there's a hardcore enthusiast crowd of gamers, and that's who we're talking to. That's who we are. But outside, there's a groundswell of just people who sort of just play games and just sort of watch games. And so like a lot of the vocal stuff isn't actually what, and my funny thing is always like, I just did a tweet about it. The Flash TV show is terrible. I haven't watched it since season 4, and it's terrible. Everyone I talked about is terrible, but every time they update a season on Netflix, it jumps into the top 10.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of motherfuckers watching that show.
Yeah.
I think
fucking
somebody's
love it.
Watching.
I'm one of them, but I know it is also not great. But I am one of them who will watch it. I would not, post that it's amazing. But
right. I think there's like a lot of people that think these communities or vocal people are just, it's just one big hive mind. You know what I mean? Like someone would be browsing through Twitter, and maybe 4 or 5 posts talking about how like a certain game is bad is enough for them to say, people just don't like it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's that vocal minority where it just blows things up. And it's like, then it's like a chain reaction because of the internet where it's like, okay, I'm going to tell this because I saw this post here. It's like, now everybody's talking about it in your head. You know what I mean? The people the people you interact with.
Right. Or like NBA 2K is horrible and rife with microtransactions, but there's a very concerted, like half of my family, who NBA 2K is the only game they pick up each year.
Mm-hmm.
And they are perfectly fine. And that does not mean that the microtransactions are fine or that everything's, but they also, especially when you're reviewing it, let people know like, hey, don't spend $60. This part doesn't work. It doesn't live up to this. But there's also just the sheer craft of it. Just being like, damn, like y'all can just.
Yeah. It's like, it's like Anthem when I was like, okay, this is a terrible game, but goddamn the music and how much work
and
they put into
that. And the 3 minutes of fighting
that you did that was actually fun after the 20-30 minute fucking loading screen.
Dude,
motherfuckers.
Anthem was such a tease because I remember previewing that going, it can't possibly be doing what it's doing. There's no way this would be a full game. But that minute to minute, I remember talking to you and you were like, dude, you were spinning, shooting missiles. And it was just, it looked, because we streamed it. And it was like, oh my God, there's just so many things going on. And then you realize they somehow truncated and they put it in a capsule of that 3 minutes of battle.
Yeah.
And you were so, it was such a weird feeling to come out and realize that game, that is what
like you want it to be so good. And then,
well, and I think we all wanted Cyberpunk to be good. Like when you saw Cyberpunk, what I was going to say about, it's so funny because you were mentioning like what we see, it is mind blowing to see Ubisoft, this is covered in the Valhalla walk in the walk. Ubisoft actually stated a very healthy thought process. And I want Johnny and Abzi to answer the question in just a second, but I want to state this. I thought it was really cool. When they were making Origins and into Odyssey and now Valhalla, there's an actual statement that they have internally, which is that we will accept small mistakes to deliver the bigger picture. And despite me picking on those small mistakes and finding that so many of them maybe added up to not enjoying one of those games, I love that attitude because there is no author, there is no musician, there is no creator in the world who thinks from 1 to 100 everything is great. It is, if you're a good creator, you will, unless you're egotistical,
you'll always critique the shit out of your
there group. Is something there that by time and by resources you weren't able to hit. And I liked that Ubisoft was, that was a top-down thing, and the fact that Guise was the one who added something to Valhalla that I honestly was like, he added that. It was cool to see, like, that energy, that like, it's okay. It is okay if we have an issue here and there, because the big bold thing, we all remember every football game we won. Maybe we trounced somebody, but maybe you had a couple bad innings, or not innings, that's baseball, but had a couple bad downs. And you're like, you know what? We had a couple bad ones, but we had a great game.
And we'd leave too much. Like, you talk Anthem, like Anthem, like the fact that you're playing, you're on the ground, you're shooting, you can go straight to flying. That worked.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they could have taken that and made another game,
yep,
a single player game, even another online game. Like, you had the core there, but they're never going to go back to that. And that's a shame.
Like, yeah, and I understand why they didn't actually do the whole remaking thing, or, you know, No Man's Skying it, because obviously it's way riskier, you know. But fuck, I really wanted that.
you know, they posted and they asked people, and I saw a lot of people saying, "We don't want you to continue to try to make Anthem." And I was one of the few people on Twitter going, "No, I want them to. I don't. Mm-hmm. I want them to try to if they think that they can figure out a way technically to handle the loading, cut that down, handle." I was like, there is something in Anthem I absolutely do enjoy, but I was definitely the smaller crowd in that crowd. Like, there were, and I'm talking huge journalists. People were like, it just needs to go away. And I'm like, all right, man, I'm not going to win this battle. You know, I'm definitely going to win it.
Yeah, I mean, they even probably thought of so much lore for it in the world. And like, it's just,
there's gone. A lot of work that's gone. But Johnny and Abzi, let's finish this up with your guys's, what's the one gaming moment? One massive gaming moment.
I have a specific one as well.
Go ahead, John.
For me, it's Elden Ring had many like awesome locations that, you know, you walk into and immediately you're, whoa, let me, you know, take a minute to take in the whole location. But I remember specifically the area where you fight Melenia?
Yeah, the Halleck Tree.
Halleck Tree. Yeah, Halleck Tree location. Dude, I kept going into that, and like, it keeps going down, and
you go to the
roots.
It's an insane,
insane location, man. And it speaks to what Mike said before, which is like, they had no restrictions on what was possible, dude. They just said, "Listen, you're gonna get into this area, and it's just gonna keep going, and it's this crazy,
right?
Impossible area. I love it."
Yeah. What about you, Abzi?
I've talked about like an amazing moment where, you know, you're on the horse and fighting the dragon, how, you know, it was like a dream as a kid, but I'll talk about a funny one now that I distinctly remember, and it stuck with me since high school. And it was, we were playing, so I had two of my friends over, and it was after school. It was the last day of school, and two of us were playing either Kane and Lynch or Army of Two, you know, back when co-op games were a thing. Mm-hmm. And then my third friend was on the side on his laptop playing World of Warcraft. And, you know, I was like basically by the desk next to my friend, and my buddy was kind of far away from the desk. He was like sitting a few feet away. And we, you know, when we were kids, we would like punch each other and shove each other and do stupid shit. So my friend on the right, who was playing World of Warcraft, kind of shoved me just out of nowhere, just shoves me. And I was like sitting here, the controller was like on the desk right next to my hand, and I twitch and I kind of shoot out the controller, and the controller projectiles and lands on my other friend's private parts like 2 feet away. And it was the most hilarious fucking entropy thing I've ever witnessed happen.
It's cool that we have memories of that, like that it's grown to be online now, a little less personal. Like, my friends don't come over as much to play a game because there's usually online multiplayer. But it's crazy to think how far gaming has gone. Like Mike said, it's crazy to think that they had to tell you in the Atari 2600 version of Indiana Jones, they had to tell you who you were because the graphics were so bad. They actually stated, you're the white blob with the yellow hat, or the yellow blob with the white hat. I can't remember. And I was like, wow. And now we're at a point where No Man's Sky. I mean, dude, I just saw No Man's Sky recently and some of the updates, and I was just like, it's beyond my dreams, which I feel insanely, what's the term? Not happy, but blessed that as a kid, whatever I had dreamed a VR game would be is actually not equaling VR of No Man's Sky. It's awesome. It is so cool. I, in fact, I feel a little bit bad that some people don't have that moment. for themselves. Hopefully they get it. But I feel pretty like that's a cherished moment to play that game and be like, holy shit, man, it's better than my dreams.
We're there. No longer am I wishing for VR going to
Toys
R Us.
Remember the age-old saying, it looks real. Remember how many times you were as a kid, you'd be playing a Saturn game with its big, nasty polygons. You'd be like, look, Panzer Dragon Orga, that's a real dragon. Look at that. And you'd have arguments with your friend. Yeah. You'd be playing the Sewer Shark 16-bit, you know, CD games, and they'd show a real person.
It's
like, that is Dana Plato from fucking Different Strokes or whatever. Like, you knew, and you're like, she's really there. This is all real. And now we're playing it, and we're still saying it when you watch Forza or GT7. It's, I don't know. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, like, what's going to happen 10 years from now?
I know.
Like, what the fuck are they going
to
do?
10 years from now, you won't be talking because you'll probably be in VR, and you'll just be thinking the answer to somebody else. Do we have anything else before we wrap this up? Is that it? Mike, what are you working on? Are you working on anything you want to talk about, or you want to wait?
I'm going to wait. Always
leak it now.
Doing games.
He's salivating for some stuff.
Yeah. Always writing about Final Fantasy 14 over at the Link Shell, and then just had a new game come in that I probably not embargoed. So
did you beat Ed Walker?
Yeah, of course it beat him.
The ending was fucking amazing. But
yeah, anyway. See, that's another one of those moments, like this is amazing.
Absolute dopamine. Just like, you know, when whatever happens, happens, and you're like, holy fucking shit.
You guys remember when multiplayer was always known as the game that multiplayer was always considered to be sort of not driven by the title, but the people? Always the people. And then Final Fantasy, I think people were stuck for too long in World of Warcraft, where a lot of people liked some of the lore, but it wasn't necessarily an amazing story. Like, you weren't, but I've heard with Final Fantasy, I will admit, that's the first one. And then the other one, I like the Secret World, where people were like, this story is single person.
Secret World was dope. The game let that down.
It did, but I'll still play it, man. I got it installed. I still play it. But the game's mechanics are hot trash sometimes.
Yeah, I can't talk about I am in the Dragonflight Alpha, so I can't talk about that yet.
Oh, dude.
Like, I'm probably not going to write anything huge about it, but, you know.
For which one?
World of Warcraft, the new WoW, the alpha started. So,
damn!
I think we can talk about that.
Yeah, I've seen Esmond play it. I think show off.
I don't think there are any embargoes or anything because they didn't send anything over. It was just on my Blizz
on your list. Well, but that'll be it for us. Yeah. I want to thank Mike. Any Friday is always open for you. Definitely, we love to have you on. It's been an absolute blast. It's awesome knowing you. You're one of the coolest dudes, and I love having you on here, man. You always have good stories. Dude. Always, I like to hear those people who are positive with some excitement. We don't bring any dire Derek, who's always bad talking games. It's very cool to have you here. Thanks to all the people who are watching. Last, we'll end this with Johnny. What are you streaming tomorrow?
Tomorrow I'm streaming BioShock Infinite, the final stream. Where we finish the story.
Oh, you're getting to the ending.
Yes.
You're getting to the... Oh, I need to watch that. You're getting to the ending now.
That'll be cool to see what you think of that. Because personally, I liked 1 and 2, but I actually think I skew towards liking Infinite more. So,
and then actually motivated by you guys, because you were doing stuff on Deus Ex. I'm going to do next Deus Ex.
Deus. Yeah.
Deus.
Yeah. Which one?
I've never known. Human Revolution first, and then Mankind Divided.
One. Yeah, dude, I'm Mankind Divided. I'm enjoying the hell out of because I'm doing a video Cyberpunk versus Deus Ex on who does Cyberpunk better, which I'm sure is going to piss off everybody. But there's a really good description, or a really good discussion that can happen around that. You're gonna like it, dude. I think you will. They're solid, man. I even liked Shadow War. I know. The only one who did, but I actually like Deus Ex Shadow War. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Anyway, that'll be it for us. Thank you, everybody, for watching. If you get a chance, check out everybody's channels. They'll be in the description. If you're doing timestamps, 0001 is when we started. 2 hours and 20 seconds is when we ended. There you go. Two timestamps, start and end. Peace out, everybody.